Ladies and gentlemen, welcome on this Sunday night, June 4th, to the second annual WGBB Tony Awards special. Yes, they liked it so much, they've done it again. And we've got a fantastic show for you. It's from 9 until midnight tonight, so we're a week away from the Tonys, which are next Sunday night. So here we are in our studios in West Babylon, New York. But take your mind away from Long Island for a moment and put it towards New York, towards the big city, towards Midtown, and all those theaters between 41st Street and 51st Street. Okay, you can throw in Lincoln Center up on 65th. We won't hold that against you. Anyway, welcome to the Tony Show. I'm Dave Lefkowitz, and if you recognize my voice, and I hope you do, although my voice is a little bit ragged because I came down with a cold before the big show, but my better voice is usually heard Sunday nights at 11 on WGBB. And I host a show called Dave's Gone By, which is a mix of comedy and talk and sketches and interviews, all sorts of stuff. But this particular time, it's going to be all theater. Sometimes I do theater on Dave's Gone By. But tonight, from 9 to midnight, we have so many guests. We have so much good stuff to do, including a bunch of critics calling in who are going to give their opinions and their picks of all the different Tony categories. Now, these are the people in the know. These are the folks who see all the shows, all year long on Broadway. So they have insight, and they have their own very, very strong opinions, as you well know, of what should win, what should not win, what should never have been nominated, and what they're so sad never got nominated. We've got people like Roz Friedman, a Connecticut radio critic. We've got Simon Saltzman, who is the president of the Outer Critics Circle. They had their own awards a couple of weeks ago. Jeannie Lieberman, another fine critic with a website called TheaterScene.net. We have Charles Gross, who's a television critic on a show called Two on the Isle on Manhattan Cable TV. And my guest host in the studio, Jeff Goodman, who is also the co-host of Two on the Isle. Before I welcome Jeff, though, our other big, big special guest calling in, I think in the 10 o'clock hour, will be a Tony-nominated actor, the one and only Danny Burstyn of The Drowsy Chaperone. So I'm really, literally, as I'm saying, I got goosebumps. A, because he's so funny in the show, and B, because we actually have a semi-star type person. Can't believe it. I'm so proud. I want to thank also Tom Ross, the program director for GBB, Jeff Lowe, the station manager for WGBB, and a little nod to David Hinckley of the Daily News for giving us that mention in Saturday's paper. Thanks so much. Jeff Goodman, my co-host from Two on the Isle here on the GBB Tony Show. How are you?
Very good. How are you, David?
I'm
besides the cold.
besides, it gives me a nice...
Besides being halfway to death, how are you?
Oh, I was only halfway to death during the Suzanne Summers show early this year. I may be parts of Lestat. Otherwise, I'm all right, just congested. So you may have to occasionally take the reins a little bit if I get a little cloudy-headed or muggle voice. Do you think it can do that, Jeff?
Oh, possibly. We'll see what we're discussing. It depends. Depends on the category.
Well,
but you know what time it is.
It's
crunch time for the Tonys.
Do you always watch the Tonys? Are you a big Tony fan? Big Tony?
Always, always.
Yeah?
It's me and a quarter honkedness, you know.
What is your most memorable Tony moment that you can think of for you?
Oh, God. Oh, I have no idea.
I know I should have prepped you on the question, but...
Yeah. Well, I loved last year with Christina Applegate. That was just, like, the best.
Tell everybody what...
She was on the road preparing for Sweet Charity, and the story is that she broke her ankle, was it?
Well, she did break her.
Yeah. And she broke her ankle, and then they weren't sure if the show was going to come to Broadway or not. It finally did. So, of course, when she was the first presenter on the Tonys last year, and she tripped into the pit or some sort of hole in the stage,
so,
which was hilarious.
Very clever gag. Yeah. Okay. That's a terrible segue. I was going to say speaking of clever gags, but no, I'm not doing a clever gag here. We're going to have a song here, and then we're going to get our first phone guest, your co-host, Charlie Gross, on the air. But first,
how lucky we are.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We have, it's not a Broadway song, but they have revived this year a very popular review from a few years past called Jacques Brel is Alive and Well and Living in Paris. And I don't think they have a CD out yet. But I figure this song, considering the fact that we're going all the way until midnight, would be a rather appropriate way to start our little, our big, our delightfully big Tony Awards special. Here's from Jacques Brel is alive and well, living in Paris, Marigold.
Actually not.
Well, no, he's dead and buried in, and I guess in Marseille. But
no, in Tahiti or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, even so, we can still play the song.
Okay.
When the music plays, join us now, we're on a marathon. Dancing, dancing through the night and day.
We must dance because the 20s roar. The 20s roar because of that of gin. Rodeo Joe and the road to sin. The road to whoopee and a whole lot more.
Charlie Lindbergh, tons of confetti. MC Tommy Sacco and Ben Betty. Black Black Monday and the market drop. But we keep on dancing as we want on. Marathon, marathon. We're always dancing when the music plays. Join us now, we're on a marathon. Dancing, dancing through the night and day.
We must dance about the 30th screen. The 30th screen because the horsemen ride. Horse and Annie live, Danny walk outside. Red light, shanty house, fine and dine bride.
They tell Taylor and the big street party. Joseph Stalin and a back full of jollies. Call your broker and buy Marzi Pan. While we keep on dancing, dancing on and on. Marathon.
Yes, it is a marathon here. And we are dancing through the Tony nominees. Again, that was not a Broadway song. That's an off-Broadway song from the original Jacques Brel cast recording.
And David was dancing.
I was dancing across the room. I was dancing across the water like Cortez, which is is a non-theater song that only non-theater people would get, I guess, but I had to do it anyway. We have a special guest on the phone who is the co-host with Jeff Goodman on a Manhattan cable TV show called Two on the Isle that airs biweekly, I think, on Friday nights. Charles Gross will tell us all about it. Hello, Charles. You there?
Doing.
Oh, hi. I'm good. I'm good, Charlie. How are you feeling? You were under the weather this week also, weren't you?
I was. I'm getting over a cold. I hope you didn't catch it. I'm feeling.
Yeah,
feeling
he got it
better
from you, Charlie. It's all your fault.
That's right.
Jeff always likes to blame things on me.
Well, yeah, it's a mutual blame game kind of thing, but no blame here. Here we only have sweetness and light and dissing about all the different people who are nominated. But Charlie, just real quick, tell people about Two on the Isle.
Well, Two on the Isle is kind of a Siskel and Ebert format. And Jeff and I have been doing it for quite some time. It's seen on in Bergen County, New Jersey, on a weekly basis. I believe it's Channel 99. And it's also seen on Manhattan on Channel 57 every other week, Friday night, 8 o'clock.
And people can also watch it and listen to it on the net.
You can, yes, yes.
By
www.mnn.org, O-R-G.
And that's M... Yeah.
M as in Mary, M as in Mary, N as in Nancy.
No, you got it wrong. It's MNN.
Oh, I'm sorry, MNN. Yeah.
I guess
I'm still under the weather.
Just
a bit.
Do MNN for Manhattan Neighborhood
Network.
That's what it stands for.
Yes.
Oh well, Charlie.
But we're also going to be on Google.
Oh, did you get the video Google thing?
Yeah, video Google.
Oh,
tell
people about
video
the
Google. Tom, you can't see us just yet.
Okay.
We were going to have the Tony Awards show, which had a special guest critic named David Lefkowitz on it.
Who's he?
Unfortunately, we've had some equipment malfunctions.
Oh.
And so I don't know if we're going to get it on this year, but
oh,
it will be on. It will certainly be on
next year.
Year
you can get our Tony Awards from last year.
Yeah. Well, when you're doing the 2007 nominees, you can broadcast the 2006 ones.
Yeah.
Just for comparison.
Yeah, well,
and we'll
know,
throw
then,
in the 2005.
Then you can see how well our predictions panned out.
Exactly. By the way, speaking of predictions,
unlike some wimpy film critics, we actually predict on Two on the Isle not only who we think should win, but who we think will win.
Have you ever tallied up how you guys are doing over the years? What your your wins and losses are as far as just predictions?
I got more.
Yeah, you think?
I generally do better than Jeff.
Oh man, you really are Siskel and Ebert after all these years, aren't you? Well, thank God you're not, because Siskel's dead and Ebert's got cancer again. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Let's get to some of the categories, shall we? Let's start with the design stuff. Get that out of the way early. Not that these are lesser awards or of any kind of less importance.
I love these awards.
They're
I really
important.
Do.
You go to the Broadway theater, not just
it's
to the
visual
but to
medium.
See it. Right. You can become part of it if the set is good. So let's start
the
with
the problem yeah. with things like lighting, set design, costume design. You know, you don't notice them per se, and that's a good thing.
Depending on the show,
if they're done right, you don't notice them.
Well, like
not necessarily set design, you notice.
True.
And it also depends. Like people would not have noticed, let's say, the Awaken Sing set
correct.
So much, except for the fact that it becomes over the course of the show, it slowly becomes dismantled and pulled off into the flies until there's no home set anymore. Some critics found that really impressive and part of the importance of this revival, and others said, no, it was too distracting. It was a director/set designer's thing that took away.
It depends. Like, a period piece tends to have a better chance because, you know, they can do something different. If it's like a modern play, they'll just think, oh, well, they slapped together, you know, some clothes, when you know, went to Sears, got
that. That's not true, because
no,
didn't you see Rabbit Hole?
But this...
Which
yeah,
had the best
this,
set design this year, I think.
Well, wait, why did Rabbit Hole have... Because that's nominated.
Rabbit
that's,
Hole, first of all...
John Lee Bailey.
John Lee Bailey, who I think is brilliant. And they had a brilliant set design, which was on three turntables that turned simultaneously and created an entire house. And it was just visually stunning, and the way they moved from room to room, and the rooms actually moved.
Right, but the houses were verite. They were all looked absolutely real. So it wasn't an imagination thing. It was creating
but
three
it was
totally
well, it was different
realistic.
Rooms in the house. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, it was just brilliant the way that set moved.
So that
and
would
how
be,
the set changed.
Would that be your choice for...
Absolutely.
Among the, let me read the nominations, by the way. They're for set design of a play, John Lee Bailey, Rabbit Hole, Bob Crowley for The History Boys, Santo Laquasto, 3 Days of Rain, and Michael Yergin, as we said, Awake and Sing. Charlie, what are your thoughts on that category?
Well, excuse me.
Of course, 3 Days of Rain did
like
rain
the
on the audience. So.
Exactly. Well,
I actually did like the set for 3 Days of Rain. I think it did convey the feeling of the show. So I don't think 3 Days of Rain is going to win because, A, the show closed, because everyone is so down that Julia Roberts
kind
of gave a standard performance instead of a brilliant performance.
Right, but we're just talking about set at this point.
Right, but again, I think it ties in because people are not, unless you've got, you know, a Lion King or a Chitty Chitty Bang Bang or, you know, a Miss Saigon with a helicopter, people are not as aware of the set as they are of other aspects.
Even Tony voters, who should be a little more...
Even Tony voters. So, you know, a show like Rabbit Hole, which is closed, and it's kind of off people's radar, probably, you know, even if you totally agree with Jeff, and, you know, I like Rabbit Hole quite a bit. I like the play as well as the set.
Uh-huh.
But I think History Boys, which is kind of sweeping everything, or seems to be sweeping everything, that's, you know, getting, you know, the scuttlebutt is that's the show that will win this year.
But the
so
set? It was
gets...
a terrible set. It
what?
Had projections, and it had
well, the projections were there to keep everything moving and trick
not,
everything up between
really
scenes.
That's not really part of the set.
Mm.
Projections are projections.
Right.
Just like there's no
again,
award for sound design.
And, yeah. I've also heard complaints, and even I was fairly centered towards the front on History Boys, but I've heard complaints of people sitting on the far sides that they really feel, among them, you, Jeff.
Yes.
So that is a function of set design, too. If whole parts of the audience either see the backstage area or feel sort of left out because the skew mm-hmm. is really for front and center and perhaps for a smaller theater.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
but
let's let that
again,
one drop.
But again, History Boys seems to be the it show this year.
What about musicals? Let's go with set design for musicals. John Lee Bailey again, he did the Color Purple set. David Gallo did the Drowsy Chaperone. Derek McLean, the Pajama Game. And Clara Zieglerova for Jersey Boys. Again, for
well,
set design.
Personally,
mm-hmm.
I think any time you can get a musical coming out of a refrigerator, that's worth something. Which,
very
which
nice
is why my choice would be the Drowsy Chaperone. Just how they open up this apartment into
yeah,
New
yeah.
York, presumably a New York City apartment, and suddenly it becomes the set of this, early 20th century musical. I just love that.
Jeff, any thoughts on that?
I thought it was the most creative set, for sure.
Well, yeah. That should mean a lot, actually.
Yeah, well, I don't know, but it's also, does the set work? Like, for Jersey Boy, I liked the set also because it was very functional.
Yeah.
Jersey Boy covered a lot of little areas, and the set design had to be so perfect because you had to realize where they were. They were in auditoriums.
Well,
they were in cafes.
They were driving into Passaic somewhere. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So the prisons. I mean, it had a, and it was. I thought it was kind of a big metal monstrosity myself. But
well, prisons would be.
But yeah. No, but I mean.
Yeah, no, okay, so would Jersey Boys be your choice, Jeff?
I agree with Rousey Chaperone.
Oh, just fun, yeah, I mean, out of the fridge. And
it's colorful, and it shows off.
Any thoughts on Color Purple? I mean, people are sort of disregarding it just because we were so bored by it, but on the set, I don't even, you know, no offense, but I don't remember the set.
There were a lot of trucks for the set, you know, the pieces that come in and out.
Uh-huh.
It was like a lot of shanties and, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that was a good set, and I, for one, was not bored with the show.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, we'll get to Best Playing Musical hopefully before the segment ends. So let's do the design things, and then we'll quickly weigh in on the big stuff. But costume design for a play, Michael Crass, The Constant Wife, Santo Loquasto, A Touch of the Poet, Catherine Zuber, Awake and Sing, and once again, Catherine Zuber for Edward Albee's Seascape. Charlie, let's go with you first.
Okay, well, I think all these shows have closed, haven't they?
Yeah, mercifully for a couple of...
No, Awake and Sing is actually extended, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, all right, so Awake and Sing is open. That kind of gives it an advantage. Shows that are still running tend to be looked on more favorably, whether they deserve it or not. However, in this case, I think the giant lizards in Seascape will get the Tony from this...
this is also a tough category for her because she's nominated for a show that's open and a show that's closed, and the better costumes are really for the closed show, but it may split the votes.
Well, but then again, I mean, you can't put a lizard in Awake and Sing. I mean, you can't. Is it better? If they could design all
the family lizards,
the
costumes were very, very good in Awake and Sing. In Seascape. There were only four of them.
Right.
But,
yeah.
You know, I thought that the older couple was dressed they were perfect for what they were doing. It was functional. They moved well.
Do you think The Constant Wife has any shot because it was a period piece?
No.
And those tend, like in movies.
No one remembers it.
Well, actually, given the amount of Tonys it's been nominated for, apparently a lot of people have remembered it, which is
That was one Tony nominated, and whoever you are, I'll get you.
Right, a friend of the Redgraves or something, yeah.
Well, Lynn Redgrave was nominated.
Right, exactly. Well, or they were just filling categories. It was a cute revival, but it wasn't special.
It was also nominated.
The Roundabout. They have to nominate The Roundabout or the Tonys explode. I told you that before.
Let's get to the explosive costumes for musical. See, I do these horrible segues.
You haven't told us your picks at all.
I don't have time to think about my picks. I think you're kind of right about the Seascape Lizard. I mean, if they want to give Seascape anything, that would be the thing.
Oh,
certainly not for set, which is sand. You know.
I thought the set was really...
It was fine. It was what it
you
was.
But they had to have all those levels, and they had to have... There was a lot of stuff going on. I thought it was a brilliant revival.
Oh, I don't like the play to begin with. But anyway, that's other stuff. Costume design for a musical. Greg Barnes, The Drowsy Chaperone. Susan Hilferty for Lestat. Martin Pakladinas, probably mispronouncing that, The Pajama Game. And
it's Pakladinas. Don't you remember when Dame Edna gave him his Tony? And just talked over his whole acceptance time. It took everything because she gave him a big kiss on the cheek.
Ew.
And during his whole acceptance speech was his big red lip mark from Dame Edna.
Oh, God.
She went, "El Martin Pakladinas."
Well, was she pronouncing it right? That's probably.
Well, I'm using the Dame Edna pronunciation.
Okay.
Okay. Now that we've got that out of the way, can we decide who's going to get the Tony or who we think should get the Tony?
Well, okay. Charlie, tell us.
All right, I think I would have to go again with The Drowsy Chaperone. Number one, I like the costumes.
Yep.
Period. It not only has to be reasonably accurate, but it has to invoke the way we imagine a 1920s musical would look. So even if it's not 100% accurate, but it certainly convinced me, you know, it certainly created that aura.
And also,
certain
Foster
musical.
Has a
also,
wonderful
Drowsy
costume
Chaperone,
change.
Like the History Boys, is the it musical this year.
Well, no, Jersey Boys, there's sort of a bifurcated it in this particular case. There's Jersey Boys, Chaperone came on strong towards the end, but if you remember, Jersey Boys held the year for about half a year.
Jersey Boys we'll have, and I guess we'll discuss this later when we get to Best Musical, but Jersey Boys is a review using non-original music.
Right. Well,
and,
yeah, I know
and
that.
Number
yeah.
one, and number two, it's not nominated in this category, so that's irrelevant.
Good point. Okay, well, what about Pajama Game, though? What about the costumes in that versus...
Pajama Game also has wonderful costumes.
But you
actually,
go,
this is one that Color Purple could win. Color Purple has great costumes.
Mm-hmm.
Are any of them actually purple?
Yes.
You noticed?
Uh-huh.
Cool. Good.
There was
your
a
job.
Lot of purple in that show.
See, you're looking for these things. I'll bet I probably should have asked one of the costume designers to be able to, because sometimes you look at it, you're like, oh, okay, and then they tell you the things that were going through their minds and the way the light hits the fabric, and it's like, whoa.
That's what I miss about the PBS version of the Tonys.
Yes.
When they did that. They did that so wonderfully, because they interviewed all the minor Tonys, as it were.
Right, and it was a pre-documentary, but you really got insight sometimes.
Oh, what a good word, pre-documentary.
Thank you. Thank
that
you
really
so much.
Good.
Let's get to some post-lighting design for Play. Christopher Ackerland for Awake and Sing, Paul Gallo, 3 Days of Rain, Mark Henderson for Faith Healer, and again, Mark Henderson for The History Boys. Lighting design Play.
I can't see it. I just can't see that award.
Yeah.
I didn't think there was any outstanding lighting this whole... I mean, Awake and Sing, possibly. I mean, there was History Boys. It depends. Are you going to do the films? What do you
call projections?
The projections. Is that may be part of lighting? I don't know.
I don't know. I would hope. I would assume not. I would assume that it's.
I know, but
I don't think people will include the projections. My choice, interestingly enough, is 3 Days of Rain.
Okay. How come?
I just feel that the lighting contributed to the overall feel of the play.
It did set moods. I think it was one of the most successful aspects of this not very successful production.
Probably the hardest thing to notice in the average play.
Yeah.
But I think it was subtle but effective enough.
Well, okay. How about lighting design for a musical? We've got The Drowsy Chaperone, Ken Billington, Jersey Boys, Howell Binkley, Tarzan, Natasha Katz, one of his few nominations, and The Color Purple, Brian McDevitt. Jeff?
Well, I think this is where Jersey Boys shines, because it does set the mood. It takes that big iron monster, whatever that is, and it really has to create all these different atmospheres.
I agree. I mean, I thought the lighting was really part and parcel of the way the thing moved along and just set these different spaces and time.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about you, Charlie.
I would have to concur.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one I think where Jersey Boys really should win, although I think it lost the Drama Desk to another on that. I was pretty stoked. Oh, no, that was the director. Sorry. It was a Des McAdoo thing. I thought he was a shoe-in, and he wasn't.
And I also Tarzan's lighting design was pretty good, too.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of good effects. Tarzan had great
Tarzan's getting short shrift, but it does some really wonderful things, even though the whole thing is kind of a mess.
I mean, the whole beginning is terrific.
Yeah, the shipwreck, the drowning. We have just a little bit of time, so let's get to direction of a play. We've got Nicholas Heitner for The History Boys, Wilson Milam for Lieutenant of Inishmore, Bartlett Scherr, Awake and Sing, and Daniel Sullivan, Rabbit Hole.
I would personally give it to Rabbit Hole, because I really, of those plays, I enjoyed it the most by far. I think History Boys is the play that will win it. Again, partially the History Boys suite, partially it is. Well, I shouldn't say it is well staged, because from where I was sitting, I had a better view of the backstage than I did of the play itself.
But I think you might be right about History Boys taking it. And yet, I have this now that it's receded into memory, I think a lot of the people I'm talking to really dug Rabbit Hole and are appreciating it more almost now that a few weeks have passed, and how subtle and well done that was.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know.
The disadvantage that Rabbit Hole will have is that it is no longer running.
Right. Well, yeah. What about Inishmore? You think it has a shot, or is that just shock value?
It certainly has a shot, and I think last year, and I'm blanking out on the play, was shock value.
Oh, Pillowman.
Pillowman was shock value. I think Inishmore has a little more going for it. I certainly enjoyed it much more than Pillowman, which I believe is from by the same author.
Yes, Martin McDonagh.
Certainly, you watch the play, you think the author should be locked up somewhere.
Oh,
but...
Well, you knew that from Beauty Queen of Lena.
Pretty much, with a hand in the pot. Jeff, I need your pick on direction of a play.
I loved Rabbit Hole. I'd Rabbit Hole everything.
Let's leave your sex life out of this, Jeff. But anyway, very quickly, Charlie, because we have to lose you. I can ask Jeff later. But your pick and prediction for best play and best musical of the year. Tony, for Broadway.
Okay. Well, my pick for best musical would be Rabbit Hole.
However,
we're living in a rabbit hole. We're living in a
our child just
history
died.
History Boys will win it.
History Boys will win for play. Right. And your again, your choice would be for Rabbit Hole?
My choice would be Rabbit Hole.
And what about musical?
Musical is a little trickier. You've got some reasonably good musicals. None of them really stand
okay,
tell out.
Okay, you love The Wedding Singer.
What?
Tell them you love The Wedding Singer.
I actually did enjoy The Wedding Singer a lot more than I had planned to. However, I think The Drowsy Chaperone, which really, as far as story and score is concerned, really isn't that much better than The Wedding Singer if you break it down. But it is such a valentine to the musical theater.
And it's original.
I'm sorry?
I mean, as Jeff says, unlike Jersey Boys, the score is original.
Right.
It may be in an old style, but it is an original thing. So you would choose Drowsy Chaperone.
I would choose Drowsy Chaperone, and I think Drowsy Chaperone will win.
Wow. Okay, Charlie Gross, you were a wonderful winner on this WGBB Tony special. Got to let you go because we've got so much other stuff to do, but you've been great. Everybody catch Two on the Isle Friday nights on Manhattan Neighborhood Network in, where else, Manhattan. Charlie, have a great one.
Thank you, Dave.
Bye, Charlie.
Bye, bye-bye. Jeff.
And now, a little more music. As soon as I hit the right button. We are working our way through the Tonys. Yes, we are going through all the Tony categories tonight with a whole bunch of people on the second annual WGBB Tony Awards special. I'm Dave Lefkowitz here in the WGBB studio live with my co-host Jeff Goodman. How you doing, Jeff, again? Whoops, I got to put your mic on. Go for it.
Okay, I'm doing well, but I just also want to remind people the Tony Awards are next Sunday night at 8 o'clock, right?
Yeah, they do the whole 3 hours. CBS goes from 8 to 11, which is kind of... Or did they squeeze it into two? No, they do three.
I think it's three.
Three, which is cool.
But it ends promptly at 11.
Well, yeah, or else. Because got to make room for that news, you know. So, that's what we're doing. And we've got great people calling in. We just got off the phone with Charlie Gross, who is Jeff's co-host at Two on the Isle. We have Simon Saltzman, the president of the Albert Critics Circle, calling in a bit later. We've got Jeannie Lieberman calling in. She runs a theater website called theaterscene.net. Who else is going to be with us? Gotta look through my little notes here. Let's go right now with a Connecticut critic. She's a theater critic for WMNR, Fine Arts Radio. She's also written theater reviews from Connecticut for Total Theater, which is a little website I know something about, TotalTheater.com. Check it out.
How do you know that one?
I'll tell a little later in the show. Okay. And she's also a voting member of the Outer Critics Circle, from which the aforementioned Simon Saltzman is the president. Her name is Rosalind Friedman, and she sees pretty much all the shows on Broadway, and she's going to weigh in on a couple of categories, too. Roz, are you with us?
I'm delighted to be with you here tonight. I don't know Jeff, but I'm glad to meet him, too.
Roz, we're old friends. Who are we kidding?
You probably recognize I know you've seen him, but maybe not just known...
I'm literally around.
And Ross,
want to add that I'm a new member of the executive board and the nominating committee for Outer Critics.
Congratulations!
I've always seen all the plays, but now I've seen them in depth because I don't only see them once. I've been invited to see them twice.
Nice.
Yes, I had to be cloned to do all of this, but it's been a very exciting year.
Well, especially
so you had to sit through Color Purple twice.
Excuse me, no, I did not see the Color I thought once was quite enough. But I did see the Drowsy Chaperone twice.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
And I became obsessed.
Oh.
But we'll get into that in a few minutes.
Yeah, let's do our categories first, and then if there's a little time left over, we'll talk about some of the overall bigger sui generis stuff. Book of a Musical. We've got The Color Purple, written by Marcia Norman, The Drowsy Chaperone by Bob Martin and Don McKellar, Jersey Boys by Marshall Brickman and Rick Elise, and The Wedding Singer, kind of thrown in there at the end, from Chad Begelin and Tim Herlihy. So, Roz, your thoughts on Book of a Musical?
Well, you know, the Book of the Musical is the spine of the show. And I have heard some of the writers speak about how important the book is. And I think this year is very interesting because Marcia Norman, who was a wonderful writer, really had to deal with a very difficult subject matter in The Color Purple. And I don't think it was terribly successful, as some of the other shows were.
What's missing? Why doesn't The Color Purple, I mean, I think I'm speaking for all three of us, that it just doesn't quite lift off. What's missing?
Because it's not true to the book.
It's not true to the book, but it's also too much.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of compacting some of this and also giving it more of a black and white flavor. I don't mean black in the sense of black. I mean black and white in the sense that the movie was much more grim. And this is much more cheerful. It's like, oh, how, let's sing and dance about all this terrible
stuff.
This has
been beating me. Let's sing.
Well, I think they were afraid to make the first act so dark. So every time that someone would get beaten or thrown around or insulted, they have a happy number so that the audience wouldn't sit there and go, oh, God, why haven't we seen this?
Those three women, I told you he'd do it. I told you.
Exactly.
Like, okay.
There was an energy to the production, and the audience that I was in enjoyed it tremendously. You know, there were positives about it, certainly, and some wonderful performances. Unfortunately, LaShans, who was one of my favorite actresses, was just swamped in this show, don't you think?
I felt that, too. I mean, I thought the actresses came through, but not enough to, like, make us care.
You know what it was? There was just too much subject matter, and then they added in that little Lion King moment in the beginning of Act 2.
Yes.
I mean, which was totally unnecessary.
Yeah, and they should have saved it for Tarzan, you know? But then, obviously the horse race in this is between Drowsy Chaparral and Jersey Boys. Where do you fall on that, Roz?
Well, it's very interesting. I really thought Jersey Boys, and I still think it's an excellent show, and Rick Elise spoke at our Outer Critics ceremonies, award ceremonies. He's one of the writers, Marshall Brickman and Rick Elise, and he really talked about how they jumped from place to place in this show, but did it in an abstract way and gave credit to the set designer. But also, I think that it's certainly a cut above the jukebox musicals generally, because of the story of Frankie Valli and how he rose to fame, etc. You know, there's some validity here.
But don't you think that's a big directorial? It's a lot because it's so well directed.
Oh, it's wonderfully directed.
Yeah, I agree.
But it's also John Lloyd Young at our ceremonies was just delightful. He won our Best Actor in a Musical Award, and he spoke so much about the thanks he gives to the critics from regional theater, particularly in New Jersey, where he did a lot of work before coming to Broadway. And that was close to my heart because, of course, we have regional theater here in Connecticut.
Okay.
And we give our own Connecticut.
So are you pulling for Jersey Boys? Or do you think it'll win?
Well, I think if it wins, it certainly would not be a disappointment. I tend to feel that The Drowsy Chaparral is one of the most charming shows I have seen in many, many years.
And I love the show, too.
It's close to my heart.
Really sweet. The Jersey Boys book is pretty fabulous. That's what makes it. Aside from the direction, really special. Let's go on to original score, music and or lyrics, specifically for the theater. The Color Purple by Brenda Russell, Aline Willis, and Stephen Bray. The Drowsy Chaparral, Lisa Lambert and Greg Morrison. The Wedding Singer, Matthew Sklar and Chad Begalen. I'm probably mispronouncing his name. And The Woman in White, Andrew Lloyd Webber and David Zippo. Gotta give them, you know, at least a score thing for that show, which wasn't so bad. But Roz...
And it wasn't that good.
Right. Roz, your thoughts on score?
Well, I think the star of The Woman in White was the lighting and the set design. You know, that was pretty spectacular,
that was
even though
Maria
there were people
Friedman,
getting sick in the audience every night. And, you know, that is a fact. The people actually became ill because of the motion of the set
I
design.
Did, too. It got me very dizzy.
Aha, uh-huh, there you go. And there were people that had to leave the theater. I mean,
wow.
There were women in the ladies' room over the sink. I loved it, but I mean, I could see where that would have been a problem if you had any kind of
ear
problem.
Did you love the musical or the look of it, the projections? I'm not clear what.
I loved the projections. I thought they were wonderful, and I sort of enjoyed The Woman in White. I didn't think it was as bad as some did. I mean, I
yeah.
think the reviews were a little bit
so heavy.
I mean, I think they were out to get Andrew Lloyd Webber. That was my personal opinion.
I thought they got him on that Jeeves show. Well, anyway.
Yeah.
And not to mention, what was Aspects
like.
Of Love? No, oh, God, Jeeves,
I
slept through that.
Excuse me?
I'm just saying that I slept through Jeeves. But your thought, again, what would you say they're going to pick, and what would you pick for score?
Well, I hope that they pick the Drowsy Chaperone. I picked the Drowsy Chaperone.
Yeah,
I had a nice interview with Lisa Lambert and Greg Morrison, who have worked on this since 1998.
Wow.
And I guess they've written the equivalent of 3 or 4 scores, taking songs in and, you know, putting them out, et cetera. It's really a very difficult project to write a score and to live with the show for a long time, to find the right song. This show just seems to do it for me.
Jeff, you agree?
I agree, but just because of its total originality. The whole show is original.
Exactly.
And nothing else. It's not based on anything, and they had to just make up the story, make up the songs. It's actually a Broadway musical.
Yes, and I think that is so refreshing. Of course, Bob Martin is absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, he co-wrote the book, and he stars in it as the man in the chair.
Yes, and he just does just a marvelous job.
Okay.
So, as far as I'm concerned, the Drowsy Chaperone would certainly be the...
The
Wedding Singer was kind of a surprise.
I thought
it had some charm to
it. I think everyone expected it to be really bad and would go, hey, this isn't too bad. It's not as bad as we thought.
Well, I think for what it is, it does well.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed The Wedding Singer. And I hear a lot of people are getting proposed to on stage.
Oh, isn't that fun?
They are at the curtain call.
I guess they're doing that now instead of the fact I love you, you're perfect, now change. That's been the reigning champion of that. Okay, we got to get
to that, by the way, started in Connecticut.
Oh, cool. Wait.
And I love to say that title.
Okay, yeah, I love you. Go ahead, say it. Say it one time.
Go ahead, Roz.
I love you. You're perfect. Now change.
Well, thank you, Roz, but we need to move on to the next category.
Sure.
Revival of a play. Yes. Awake and Sing, the Clifford Odets drama. The Constant Wife, the Somerset Maugham comedy. Edward Albee's Seascape, excuse me. The Edward Albee something. And Faith Healer, Brian Friel. Roz?
Okay. I have to admit, I did not see The Constant Wife, which I understand was wonderful. But I was not available.
Who'd you understand that from, Roz?
It was all right. It wasn't wonderful.
Many people really loved that show.
Really?
Said nice things about it. But an Edward Albee Seascape, I found an excellent revival. I thought it was very well done. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the text. I'm afraid that the Faith Healer, I don't know about you guys, I fell asleep.
Wow.
I found that the monologues were very difficult. I've seen this done before, and I did not fall asleep. For some reason, Terry Jones just was not right for that part.
Yes. I have to say, I mean, I it makes me sad when people, you know, diss Faith Healer as a play, because I've seen it work, and it's a long play, and it's all monologues, and I would watch it, and I tell them, no, it's beautifully written. It really is a wonderful piece. And I've seen it in small, little productions. And here, there's just not enough movement, and Terry Jones isn't quite right or believable. Ian McDiarmid is fabulous, but there's something missing.
He really lit up the stage, and I wasn't familiar with his work, and I thought it was excellent.
So, Jeff, what's your revival pick?
I happen to have loved Seascape also. I think it's a great show. I thought it was a brilliant revival. I thought it was well-directed. I thought the sets and costumes were perfect.
I'm going to give it to Awake and Sing.
Awake and Sing is my choice.
Okay.
I didn't get to that point because I was working my way through the other shows.
Working my way through the... Okay, sure. Go ahead. Well, yeah, tell us a little more about why Awake and Sing.
Well, you know, my husband and I knew Morris Karnofsky. We met him here in Connecticut when he was at the American Shakespeare Theater in Stratford, and he was playing the leads, and we got to know him and his wonderful wife, who passed away last year. That's Phoebe Brand. They were the original members of the company for the group theater. And they knew all about Clifford Odets, and they told us story after story about all the people and how this group came together, and Harold Clurman. And so it seemed very live to us. And there's a lake in here in Trumbull, where I live, and it's called Pinewood Lake. In those days, it was called Pine something else. But anyway, the group theater came for a summer there and stayed in little cottages around the lake. And they had a theater, and the theater is still there. It's not really used. It's a clubhouse. but there is a theater in the clubhouse.
Okay.
And the actors all got together and did their stage exercises there, their theater exercises.
Mm-hmm.
And so this play is very close to my heart.
Well, that's not quite fair to the other play. I mean, if you're, you know, letting all
well,
that.
Well, I had a really good experience with lizards. That's why I like Seascape.
Okay. I go on to
I had
say
a pet
that when I went to see
to
the
me.
Play, mm-hmm. when I went to see this play, Awaken Sing, I felt that it was done with great authenticity.
Ooh.
There was a, it's a meaty play. You feel like you're seeing a complete family. Every actor was excellent and it was wonderful. The direction was very interesting. I must admit, I saw this in preview, and when the stage set began to lift, I thought it was a mistake. I thought there might be something wrong
we
with the
set. We were talking about that before.
Until
yeah.
I realized what Bartlett's chair was trying to do here.
And did it work for you when you realized that?
Yes,
you,
it did.
Okay.
Yes, it
cool.
did.
Okay, Russ, I'm afraid we've got to move on to some other stuff, but I want to just tell people when they can hear you on WMNR Radio.
Oh, thank you. I'm on Tuesday and Thursday at 5:55 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
and Saturday and Sundays at noon.
Great. And good luck with your executorship. What was it for the Outer Critics Circle? Forgive me for not...
Well, I'm on the executive board,
yeah.
and, which is also the nominating committee. So we have done our work this year. We are already beginning the new season. Of course, new plays are opening every day.
Of course.
So are you nominating Tarzan or no?
That's right.
Well, that's the next,
next year. Right,
that's
exactly.
That's the next year.
Okay, Roz, great to talk to you. Thank you so much for being part of the GBB Tony special.
Thank you very much.
You got it.
Nice to speak to both of you.
Thank you, Roz. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Roz Friedman from Connecticut. We've had, let's see, a couple of critics on already. Let's curve the field a little bit and talk to someone who is a critic, but is also better known as a playwright, and a very good one. And I say this not just because I know him and he's a friend and stuff like that.
And wasn't he on last week?
He was on. As a matter of fact, that last week I talked to Jeff Sweet, who's the author of The Value of Names and Porch and American Enterprise, which was that was probably his best-known off-Broadway work, although it looks like he'll start having some more stuff done locally quite soon. Anyway, we talked about a bunch of stuff, and towards the end of the interview, I asked him about some of the major categories of this year's Tony Awards and nominations. So here, from last week, for about 10 minutes, is Jeffrey Sweet weighing in on the Tonys.
Do you still see most of the Broadway and off-Broadway shows?
Well, I see all the Broadway shows because I'm on the Council of the Dramatists Guild, which makes me a Tony voter.
Oh, cool.
So I see all the Broadway shows. I get to see a reasonable amount of off-Broadway as well. And I'm also writing a blog for Backstage's online.
Cool.
So between all of these different affiliations, I usually can get in to see whatever I want to see, and I see a fair amount of stuff.
Well, as a Tony voter,
yeah.
What you voting for this year?
I have to tell you that in my opinion, this has been a kind of a doggy year.
Okay.
You know, when you think like last year, we had four really viable musicals for Best Musical. You know, there were four shows that are still running.
Yeah.
You know, we had four musicals that were hits in one season. Wow, we hadn't had anything like that since the early 60s.
And they were pretty much worthy hits. I mean, Spamalot's Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is delightful.
Yeah.
Spelling Bee, what was the fourth?
And Light in the Piazza.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, and all four of them are hits.
Hmm.
And it was delightful, and they all had their own particular strengths, but you had to parse out which you thought had a better score and which you thought had a better book and which was overall a better production and so forth. But it was really a contest.
But this year, actually, we have four musicals that may be commercial hits, if not critical ones. If you think about the four that are nominated, there's a possibility there.
Yeah. I mean, Jersey Boys is going to make its money back, obviously.
Drowsy Chaperone is selling well because the critics loved
yeah.
it. And Color Purple is selling well because of Oprah.
Yeah, so you've got possibly three hits there, and I wouldn't be surprised if Wedding Singer ekes through as well because it makes its... It makes its audience happy. My theory is that Wedding Singer is the show that you go to see if you can't get into Jersey Boys.
Mm-hmm.
They're both celebrations of Jersey culture.
And if you're coming through the tunnel, you know, on the weekend with your parents, that's, yeah. But
yeah.
You sound less excited about that crop.
I'm not terribly happy about the scores of any of them.
Mm.
I, I'm, I, I'm, I'm sitting there. I mean, there's some lyrics that I like in Drowsy Chaperone, but I'm not nuts about the music in that, and I'm not. Of course, Jersey Boys doesn't have an original score,
right.
So they've nominated the Andrew Lloyd Webber, David Zippel score for Woman in White. I was disappointed in that. I wanted to like it more, but
I don't think there is a score this year that's really knocked anybody. I mean, as much as people, and I had a great time at Drowsy Chaperone, I can't say that I came out of there like from an Irving Berlin musical going, oh yeah, you know, the score is just part and parcel. You know?
No, it's a very good extended review sketch. Bob Martin is from the Toronto company of Second City, and since I'm a big Second City fan, I'm delighted for that. And he also co-wrote a TV series I love called Slings and Arrows, which is the best series I've ever seen about the theater, which is a parody of the Stratford Festival up in Ontario. They've been running it on the Sundance Channel, and very, very funny show.
Oh wow!
So
okay.
I'm a fan of his, and I'm a fan of the show, The Drowsy Chaperone. But on some level, I'm a little disappointed because this should have been an engaging also ran. It should not be, you know, the favorite. This is a show that's like so many shows that have been nominated or won in the past few years, makes fun of musicals. And we've had so many musicals that make fun of musicals over the past few years, and not very many really good original musicals, you know, musicals that take themselves seriously. One of the things that was pleasing about Light in the Piazza was that it didn't mock the form. Spamalot mocked the form, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels mocked the form, Spelling Bee mocked the form.
Avenue Q mocks as well. Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Avenue Q as well.
Oh, Avenue Q, absolutely. And You're in Town. And, you know, musical's a musical.
Now, most of these musicals are really liked, I mean, I have to say. But
yeah, I think You're in Town has got a pretty tough underneath. It's actually saying something very seriously political. And that show is really much tougher than an affectionate parody of musicals. It's about how we distract ourselves with amusements and pay no attention. And we are under the illusion that because we support the right culture that we're doing something.
Right.
You know, so there's underneath it, it's actually a rather tough show with some unpleasant things. You know, we people who've seen the show forget that, yes, the corporate bad guys, you know, die. But in the epilogue, we discover that...
nobody has enough fresh water.
Well, not only that, she dies too. So there's precious little comfort in there for anybody of any political persuasion in that show. It's a very tough little show.
Well, I mean, at the very end, the lead character holds up a book of Malthus and says, read this. I mean, that's Brecht right there.
Malthus, yes.
Well, we have only very, very little time left, unfortunately, so I want to ask very quickly about the plays of this year, and both Broadway and off, and your thoughts.
I will end up voting for History Boys because it's consistently witty and entertaining, and I, God knows I enjoyed it, and I've been following the guys from Beyond the Fringe ever since those days. I'm not over the moon about the play because I don't quite believe it. I enjoyed it, but I don't quite believe it. I don't believe that because this guy comes in that he all of a sudden turns everything around in the school because they succumb to his cynicism.
For me, the plays were actually weaker than the musicals. I like Rabbit Hole, though.
Well, I liked most of Rabbit Hole. I thought that it repeated its effects a little bit. I would have cut the first scene in the second act and taken out the intermission and played it as a 90-minute one act. And I think that's just my sort of meatball surgery. But every scene was about the ghost of the kid in the room and how it was affecting everybody. And you know, how many times can you say we're devastated, we're devastated, we're devastated, or dramatize that? That said, I liked it a lot. I just was.
I mean, you know, God forbid you should ever have to get over the loss of a. I mean, I imagine that's what life is for a couple of years.
Absolutely.
After you, everything is the kid in the room.
The needs of drama are different than the needs of life. It took all evening to do what Shakespeare did brilliantly with one speech in King John, when Constance talks about grief walking up and down with her in the corridors, the death of her son. I still think it was a darn good play, and I was glad it was on this season. Actually, the play that I was surprised by, because I didn't expect to care much for it at all, was Festin, which I saw late in its run.
Ooh.
And maybe when it opened, they hadn't found their ensemble. But 4 weeks in, when I saw it, I thought it was just riveting, and I thought that the performances were sensational. I thought that Larry Brigman was absolutely cheated of a nomination he should have gotten. I thought that Michael Hayden was about as good as I've ever seen him. I thought that people absolutely misunderstood what Ally McGraw had been directed to do. They say that she was giving an unconvincing performance. She's playing the part of a woman who is trying to ignore the fact that she's been living with a monster for 30 years and has done nothing about it. So the artificiality is the part. So I sat there with a friend of mine, and we were both dumbstruck by what impact it had on us. My agent, who teaches at a university, sent some of her students to see it, and they all came back, and that was their favorite show of the season. So I think it got kind of a bum's rush. I think it's a much more interesting play, and I certainly would have put it up if I'd been on the nominating committee. That would have been one of the ones that I nominated over...
Over Well or whatever else.
Yeah,
got.
Well, which is...
That's a Lisa Krohn play about her mom.
Yeah,
or sort of about her mom, meta-theatrically.
Yeah, which I...
As she says 10,000 times.
Of it, but I thought that the best parts of it were indeed the mom, and that the other stuff would tend to be either clumsy or a little cute. And The Lieutenant of Inishmore, I thought it was just wonderfully crafted, but it made something beautifully that I just didn't care for.
Hmm.
I think that this is a Martin McDonagh. His guiding aesthetic is, what can I do to get at the audience? How can I make them squirm, or how can I make them? And he's done this in play after play after play, and I find that slightly juvenile.
Well, he is. When he was writing these things, he was in his early 20s.
Yeah. I know, and this is very obviously sort of, okay, I'm going to try to do on stage what Quentin Tarantino did in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Just as Lonesome West was his response to True West and American Buffalo. And on some level, you know, as well done and as well crafted as it is, and I think Inishmore on some level is one of the best crafted plays he's done. The mock disemboweled people on stage and all the blood packs that had exploded and all the rest of it, I thought that really he ultimately was not making a point so much as jolting the bejesus out of the audience. I felt very similar about The Pillow Man, although The Pillow Man I found actively distasteful.
You know,
I thought it pretended to be about something and really was only about getting a rise out of the audience. I know a lot of people who don't agree with that, and that's fine. That's why we have conversations, you know. But I'm not a part of his.
Okay.
But you know, sometimes writers develop. I remember that in the early days that Richard Greenberg's plays were very superficially clever and glib, and I was not a big fan. And then he wrote Eastern Standard, and that seemed to signal a transition. And then after that, he wrote four or five plays that I just think are glorious, you know, culminating in Take Me Out. So I'm, even when he doesn't succeed, I'm always eager to go to see another Greenberg play, because between that and The American Plan and a few of his other plays, some of those plays are just gorgeous.
Well, that was the surprising thing about Rabbit Hole from David Lindsay Bear. I mean, his other plays were these kind of audience-baiting, goofy, weird, sort of sick trailer trash fantasy things where his trademark was becoming...
What outrageous thing can I do now?
Yeah. And
yes, and I think that represents an advance for him. It was like...
it was a leap.
Nikki Silver had a play... it was done at the Vineyard, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was a real revelation from him. It was such a break in what he had done before. It got creamed by the critics, but I went with a friend who joined me reluctantly because she was not a Nikki Silver fan either. And at the intermission, we looked at each other and said, "Am I nuts, or is this really good?"
Hmm.
And we were, you know, tremendously impressed by it, tremendously moved by it. What he had suddenly done was found a point of empathetic contact with his own characters. Rather than making fun of people's pain and downfall and embarrassments, he actually, you got a feeling that he cared about the characters for the first time. The wisdom had suddenly arrived. And that once wisdom arrives, you never go back to writing juvenile stuff. You know, easy jokes about people's infirmities or...
Well, I still like easy jokes about infirmities, so I still have that juvenile streak. But I'm thrilled. Jeffrey Sweet has been with us sharing his wisdom and his theater experience, and I want to wish you best of luck.
Well, thank you for inviting me. My pleasure.
And it was our pleasure to have Jeffrey Sweet on the WGBB Tony special. Jeff Goodman wants to say...
Hi. Drama.
That's right. We have another caller coming in. Eva Heinemann will be talking to us about her Tony experiences, but we have to do some business first.
Ooh.
So stick around. We have two more hours of the WGBB Tony special. Please don't go away. Welcome back to the second annual WGBB Tony Awards special on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport. Also, by the way, if you're driving along and maybe it's getting staticky or you're coming home and you may live in an area where the station doesn't come in so well, you know that you can listen to us on the internet at am1240wgbb.com. Live streaming audio, am1240wgbb.com. I'm Dave Lefkowitz, here with you until midnight, hosting the Tony special. If you know my voice or that name, and hopefully you do, it's because my show Dave's Gone By has been airing on this station since October 2002. And that's an hour of humor and talk radio, interviews, music, all sorts of stuff. It's a little different every week. And sometimes we do theater stuff. We'll have playwrights on, or critics I'll talk to a lot, and I'll sometimes play show music, all sorts of things. Well, this is all theater. We've been here since 9, we're here till midnight with a Tony special. We just talked to playwright Jeffrey Sweet, giving his thoughts on some of the big shows of the year on Broadway. We talked before to Roz Friedman and Charlie Gross, and in the studio with us we have cable TV theater show host, how to get that out properly, Jeff Goodman.
I prefer the word superstar.
Oh, Jeff Goodman. So, well, you already have a fan. This is amazing. I'm on the air nobody cares. Jeff Goodman is on the air for an hour doing the Tony Show, and we got a call from Pat of Levittown. So, Pat, thanks for listening. Keep it here until midnight. Pat says she loves you, Jeff.
Oh, well, I love her.
Oh, see, keep listening. Keep listening, everybody, because we have more great guests.
Because I love you all.
There you go.
And call in.
No,
can they call in? Oh, no, not tonight?
They can call in, but I really, time-wise, it'll be a little bit. If you hear music playing, call in and tell us how much you love us and how much you love the theater and tell us what show you loved this year most of all. But we've got to get to our next phone guest. And by the way, stick around because at 10:30, we're calling Danny Burstyn, Tony-nominated actor for The Drowsy Chaperone.
We're so excited.
I am.
I am, too.
And he's so funny in the show, so it's doubly exciting to get not only...
Maybe he'll do one of his in a thousand voices.
Yeah, I just want him to say what, the way he says, you know,
what?
Isn't that great?
I want to ask him about the cats. That's all I want to ask him about.
Well, before all that, though, let's not you know, forget that we have a wonderful guest.
This is one of my favorite people.
Oh, really? Why, Jeff?
I love Eva.
Eva Heinemann. And why do you love Eva Heinemann?
Because she's one of those people that you meet in the theater, that she's a character, and she's just so nice.
Yeah.
You can't help but love Eva Heinemann.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, Eva, also, like you, has a cable TV show.
As a matter of fact, hers is on just before us, I believe.
So, yeah, we'll ask her. It's called High Drama on Manhattan Cable. Eva, are you with us?
Yes, I am. And, Jeff, I love you, too.
I love you, Eva.
I'm glad you said I was nice, but some people don't think I'm so nice.
Okay, well, here's the deal. Most of the other critics who are calling in tonight are weighing in on the different categories of the Tony Awards, what they think will win and what they really hope will win. And I was going to ask Eva to do that, too, but she stopped me short before I even got started in asking her by saying that she had attended the big cocktail party for all the Tony nominees and also for the press to meet and greet and do their interviews and stuff. So I thought, oh, great, you know, you can tell all these anecdotes and what did they say and how was it, except you had a really horrible experience. So, Eva, the mic is yours, or at least the telephone is. Tell us, what was this?
I'm dying to hear this.
Yeah, what happened?
Oh, please bring back Keith Sherman as a press agent for the Tony Awards. Please, at least they understand theater. These initial press agents, like PMH, PMK, HBH, I don't know who the hell they are. They're ridiculous.
Well, start at the beginning.
They'll be happy to hear that.
Yeah.
Thanks
for costing me all future sponsorship here. Okay.
These are the opinions of Eva Heinemann and not anyone else's.
Right, exactly. So you went to the Tony cocktail party and...
It's not a cocktail party. Okay. It's in the afternoon. It's called a Meet the Press... Meet the Press nomination. The nominators meet the press.
Was Tim Russert there?
It's a view at the Marriott Marquis. And they do this every year. And last year, these same people with my same credentials let me go up with all the rest of the people,
mm-hmm.
So to the view, to the top. And this happened with Keith Sherman, where all of a sudden I was persona non grata, but they would let me go by the elevators by the view, and I would do my interviewing there, because all the press agents know me, the actors, everyone knows me. I've been doing this for 11 years, for God's sake.
That's right, your show has been on the air on Manhattan Neighborhood Network for 11 years.
Yeah, right before Two on the Isle.
Well, at least it wasn't always, but it is now. Yeah.
It is now.
Okay.
So, it's a great double feature.
And you're... Yeah.
Yes. And I emailed them, telling them that I was going to go do what I used to do with Keith Sherman, which is, you know, go by the elevators and grab interviewers as I can. If they want, if they say no, fine, no problem.
Well, Eva, who are some of the people that you have interviewed on the fly in your
Who
have
you grabbed, Eva?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I was just thinking of Alan Bates. I got Alan Bates.
Okay.
And I've gotten Lauren Bacall in the past. I mean, I've gotten great people. I mean, Richard Griffiths, for God's sake, talked to me for like an hour. He is so cool.
Who was that?
That was this year. Richard Griffiths.
This year.
Ooh, did you hear what he did on the 29th of May?
What?
No.
He stopped the show. Someone's cell phone.
Cell phone.
Yeah, someone's cell phone rang. He hates that. He stopped the show.
Yeah.
And he scolded the people. He goes, now, the stage manager told you to please turn off your cell phone. We told you it was illegal in New York State. Now, turn off your cell phone. And he stopped. He goes, I'm going to start it again. And he did. And in England, he actually got people thrown out of the theater for having their cell phone.
Good for him.
He hates it.
Oh, man. I mean, if I tell you, I think it was not Faith Healer. There was one that was really a very quiet show that was interrupted incessantly by cell phones when I went to see it. It was almost, literally, people were in a rage around this person whose phone kept ringing and ringing. But Eva, we're taking away from your story.
I'm sorry, Eva.
So when you were interviewing Richard...
I just want to tell a quick theater rage story on my part. I was at Sweeney Todd matinee, and these women behind me with a plastic bag, they weren't even opening candy, they were just deliberately rattling a plastic bag. I actually physically grabbed the plastic bag with them and almost hit them over the head with it.
You slap them, Eva. You're so nice.
Oh, I've done such similar things. I don't have time to get into them, but I've been rather nasty to people who were just noisy.
Yeah,
but Eva.
Talk to each other.
I emailed PMH, whatever the heck they're, the initial.
PMK,
I emailed them and told them what I was going to do. I said, if that's a problem, let me know. They didn't let me know. I get there, my cameraman, Barry Liebman, was there. Someone approaches me. I tell them what I'm going to do. They don't say anything. They say, fine, no problem. Then I talk to Mark Ruffalo and Pablo Schreiber from Awakened Things.
Wow.
And Mark and I are discussing Clifford Odets because I was really upset because Clifford Odets named names and I thought he was a pig and that he's a hypocritical bastard because he doesn't believe what he writes. But then Mark actually took away my disillusionment and gave me my illusionment back because apparently Clifford Odets said to the House of Un-American Activities,
Eva, please.
Darn you. But he said, F you to the, you know, I'm just quoting Mark Ruffalo. He said the same thing. That, you know.
That's going to cost you, Eva.
To the House of Un-American Activities. I'm sorry about that.
No problem.
And maybe that's why I got into trouble, too.
I guess so.
So apparently Clifford Odets only named people who already said they'd been named. He was proud to be a communist, and he stood up for himself. And I was so happy. We were talking about communism and socialism and all this other stuff. And then he went upstairs, and the next thing I know, a nasty old cop is in my face saying, pack up and go.
No.
Excuse me, I say. And they say, the clients want you to go. I go, what clients? And he wouldn't. And they were the PMH people at the table. And they would not even, he wouldn't even let me approach them. I couldn't even go up to them. They didn't have the courtesy to even talk to me or anything. And I'm like, you know, what's going on here? And they were talking about my stupid credentials, which were fine last year, but now for some reason this year, who knows what the problem is.
Well,
why they think I'm a communist.
Eva, you call them up and you quote Clifford Odets to them.
That's right, yeah. Awaken, you know, and shriek.
Awaken curse.
But why don't you just signal the PMK people and say, hey, what's going on here?
Well, I did.
Aren't they the people who wanted
and
to leave?
They were, like, afraid to approach me, I guess. Like I said, I don't know, maybe they thought I was a communist. I don't know.
I don't think that mattered. Eva, you need to take a breath on this. I mean, I know you're upset. I know you want to vent on this. But what happened when the policeman showed up?
The police showed up?
No, that's what she said. A cop was one
cop.
Policeman. Was he a cop from the street or just from wandering around the... Oh, okay, yeah.
No, he was
a guard. You got attacked by the Marriott police?
But the thing is, with T. Sherman, when the security guard, this was not a cop, but a security guard approached me, T. Sherman said, no, leave her alone, it's okay.
Huh.
He shooed the security guard away and protected me, while these people, they attacked me with the cop.
Well, Eva, you just got to tell these people who you are. They just don't know who you are.
Well, they shouldn't know. She sent an email. She said who she was. And what has been, I guess, at the point the police showed up, you left.
It wasn't the police. It was the Marriott
police.
No, it was a policeman. It was an actual policeman, a scary policeman with a gun.
Oh, this New York City police were there to escort you out?
Yeah.
Really?
Give a flower to the big fat cop. He takes his glove and he beats me up.
Sorry, I just had to do that.
It's true, though.
But by the way, I wanted to ask this when I was talking to him the other day. Did they keep the camera rolling? Was your cameraman taking any of this?
Unfortunately, he wasn't because we had finished our interview, so we stopped the interview. We were talking about, you know, wasn't that cool, Mark Ruffalo? The thing is, he kept talking to me. I had to shoo him away because, you know, we were having such an interesting conversation.
So what are you going to...
He's an intelligent actor. I really like him.
Well, what are you going to do, though, about...
Eva, here he's single.
Is he really? Oh, I don't know.
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah. No, but so now that you left, you know, I mean, they did not beat you up, but they had a menacing police...
Are you allowed back in the Marriott anymore?
It was a humiliating situation.
Yeah, and you don't need a theater professional. And I gave them plenty of opportunities to deal directly with me. All they had to do, if I was upsetting them or they didn't like me or for whatever reason.
But were you upsetting?
All they had to do was say, excuse me, this isn't working, do you mind leaving? And I would have gone.
Well,
are you sure that that's who called the police on you?
Yes.
In other words, it wouldn't have been just the hotel doing it. It would have been PMK.
No, they said
someone
the
said
client,
there's a little woman in the elevator lobby.
With a cameraman, yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't anyone else filming there?
They were all filming upstairs.
Oh, you were downstairs on the entrance to the venue.
Maybe they thought you were a security risk. Maybe you were filming.
But how come
place.
You weren't allowed to go upstairs?
I don't know why this year I was not allowed. Maybe because, you know, Julia Roberts, David Schwimmer, even though they weren't there, who knows? I guess Harry Potter.
Did you even want to talk to Julia Roberts, really?
Well, I like her.
I talked to her.
We won't
she thinks the world of you.
Yeah, exactly.
She's a pretty woman.
So, but Eva, what are you going to do, aside from going on you know, the CBB Tony show and saying naughty things, what are you going to do? Are you writing letters? Are you, what are you doing?
Sue him. Sue him. I say sue him.
Well, no, really.
No, what I was going to do was, I mean, because, see, I'm a nice person, and I know everyone's busy with the Tony Awards right now, and I don't want to bother people because they're busy with the Tony Awards. I'm going to write to Jed Bernstein, and I'm going to write to Sandra Gilman, and I'm going to let them know what happened.
Well, I thought Jed was leaving office, like, imminently. He's the head of the League of American Theaters and Producers. And he's stepping down, I thought, at the very end of the season. So you better get him quick. And Sandra Gilman is what? She's, who is she?
She's the head of the American Theater Wing now.
Right, okay, so yeah, they're the folks who co-produce the Tony Awards. I guess we should have prefaced it with that. Well, I wish you luck with...
Oh, and Eva, I have to have you get on my little problem, too. I have to tell you about a little problem I have.
Off the air.
Off the air.
Unless you want to talk about it
in I want Hound Dog Eva on my case. You get after him. You go, girl.
But I do want to put in a plug for the Drowsy Chaperone, because I do love that show.
You talk to anyone from the Drowsy Chaperone?
All of them.
Who'd you talk to?
Oh, well, Eva, tell your story about when you saw the Drowsy Chaperone the first time.
Oh, do I have time to tell this?
Make it quickly.
Okay, because it's a wonderful story. The National Alliance of Musical Theaters in September put on 45-minute versions of musicals to shop around to the rest of the country. And they had the Drowsy Chaperone. And you're only allowed 45 minutes. But the audience loved it so much that we actually rioted. They had to come in and quell us because we wanted to see the whole thing. We didn't want them to leave. We loved it so much.
Eva, you're a troublemaker. You know?
So you've been arrested and quelled.
That's right. Well, I'm afraid we have to quell you now because we've got to move on with the show, but thank you for calling in.
And
sorry
we love you, Eva.
I'm sorry you had that bad experience. But I'm sure, I hope you have many, many better Tony and theater experiences in the years to come. When again can people watch High Drama on Manhattan Cable?
Yes, on Channel 57, Time Warner, RCN Channel 85, streaming www.mnn.org. 7:30 to 8 p.m. is High Drama, 8 to 8:30, 2 on the aisle.
You have that down. I don't even know it that well.
Well, Eva...
When am I on again?
You're on after Eva.
8:30.
8:30 for every other Friday, is that it?
8:30 every other Friday.
It's like a little theater block. It's
our
really
next
cool.
show will be June 2nd. And you can hear the Mark Ruffalo interview. I've got the Mark Ruffalo interview on my show June 2nd.
So fans of Awaken Sing, go see or watch Eva Heinemann's show on June
and see
2nd.
How she got arrested.
That's right.
The interview that got her almost arrested.
Almost.
The indignity of it all.
Yes.
It truly is.
Well, thank you for sharing your indignancy with us.
And we love you.
I coined the word there. And yes, we love you, Eva. And
she's gross indignancy.
3 degrees of it.
Eva, have a great one.
I got the third degree on it.
There you go.
Happy Tonys.
Bye-bye.
Hop all out and warned about this. I'm going to beat you clean to death. Get my milk. You throw your food on the floor, you eat it off the floor, you little pig. You get nothing from me, gal. And the next one of you says a word, get tied to the fence post. Bedrooms upstairs.
I say a prayer.
She likes it fast, real hot. Like it soft. For you got to rub his feet with some cinnamon oil. Save it with the hope it's understood. Get ready for the big dog!
And we are getting ready for the big dog. More dogs, more music, more interviews on the WGBB Tony Awards special.
A Taste of the Color Purple.
Yeah, that was the Color Purple.
That wasn't so good, was it?
Well, it was kind of a bouncy one of the more numbers that gets your attention. You know, when he says bedrooms upstairs, that sounds a chill. Of the Kingsley Legs singing that, and LaShawn's, of course, the co-star there. Let's hear a little bit more Broadway music. Let's go for some.
Some Tony Awards.
Yeah, we will do that. We've got Iris Dorbian coming up in just a moment to do some of the featured actor and actress categories.
Good.
But let's hear let's hear an off-Broadway song from a show called Thrill Me.
Ooh, good.
Go figure, they made a musical out of the story of Leopold and Loeb. I guess if they can do James Joyce as the Dead, that basically took
Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, exactly. So Leopold and Loeb, two killer sort of gay young men who loved each other in a very sick way and tried to get away with a perfect crime, and they did a chamber musical of it, which I think was nominated for a couple of the, you know, Broadway only, the Tonys only deal with Broadway. But I think now the Critics Circle recognized
them
for a few
things. And also, I think
Trauma Desk may have, too. So let's hear, I have some trouble sometimes with the lyrics of the show, but it seems kind of interesting to me. Here's a number called Nothing Like a Fire, sung by Stephen Dolgenoff and Doug Krieger. Thrill me.
Look at it smolder. It's breathtaking. And you know what a little misdemeanor does for me, babe? There's nothing like a warm romantic fire to put me in the proper frame of mind. There's nothing like a roaring, raging fire to help me unwind. There's nothing like the sound of crackling embers to calm me when my pulse begins to race. There's nothing like the glow of sizzling embers to brighten your face. Feel the heat intensify. Watch the sparks begin to fly. Watch the smoke fill up the sky. Straight to the stars.
Straight to the stars.
There's nothing like the sight of something burning.
Something burning.
To soothe me with a hot, seductive light.
Seductive light.
There's nothing like the smell of something burning.
Something burning.
To start to ignite my desire. There's nothing like a fire. Intensify. Watch the sparks begin to fly. Watch the smoke fill up the sky. Clouding the night.
And we are clouding the night with the fires of nominations.
Oh, I really like that.
Yeah, that's a pretty song. I mean, not all of it is quite as intriguing, but that's a nice number from the Off-Broadway show Thrill Me, no longer playing, but it ran for a bit, the Leopold and Loeb story. We have with us on the phone Iris Dorbian. She is the editor-in-chief of Stage Directions magazine, and she's going to talk with us about the featured actor and actress categories. Hi, Iris, how you doing?
Hi, Dave, how are you doing?
I'm great.
Hi, Iris.
Jeff Goodman is with me, I'm sorry. Sorry,
oh, hi, Kevin. How are you? I had a chance to listen to the score for Thrill Me, and I really enjoyed it very much. Enjoyably dark.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, like, Lestat, which is just...
not enjoyably dark.
Not enjoyably anything. Featured actor in a play. We've got Samuel Barnett, The History Boys. Actually, Jeff, can you read these? My voice
sure,
is
great. Sure. We have Dom... Oh, sure, give me the top one. Dom Hall?
Domhnall Gleeson
for The Lieutenant of Inishmore, Ian McDiarmid for The Faith Healer, Mark Ruffalo for Awake and Sing, and Pablo Schreiber for Awake and Sing.
Iris?
Iris, discuss.
Yes. Okay, so who I think?
Who do you think,
who
and,
you
which
think
one?
And why?
Isn't Ian McDiarmid also?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's going to be between Samuel Barnett and Ian McDiarmid.
Okay.
I think it's between them.
I think I agree. But do you think that History Boys will give it the push for Samuel Barnett?
The Drama Desk gave it to Samuel Barnett, but that's only because Ian McDiarmid. I don't think he was nominated, was he?
No, it didn't open. Yeah.
Okay.
Honestly, I think maybe Ian McDiarmid might have a push just because he's more well known.
And he gives such a brilliant performance.
Yeah, he is quite wonderful. And Samuel Barnett, you know, gives a very memorable turn, you know, as the history boy who is whose life is destroyed.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to featured actress in a play. Sorry, I have to rush through these, but we're a little time crunched. Tyne Daly in Rabbit Hole, Francis de la Tour, The History Boys, Jane Houdyshell, Well, Alison Pill, The Lieutenant of Inishmore, and Zoe Wanamaker, Awake and Sing.
Okay. I thought that Jane Houdyshell?
Houdyshell, I think.
Houdyshell.
I think she's wonderful in as the mother in Well, mm-hmm. but I think it's going to be Frances de la Tour.
I agree.
Absolutely. I think she is extremely... She's
although
not.
I think there's a groundswell for Zoe Wanamaker, too.
Well, because that's a lead role.
Yeah.
And
people like her.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be Frances de la Tour. I really do.
And I don't think she was. She played. No,
she was bad, but I have my whole problem with History Boys coming to Broadway, opening for 6 weeks, and then closing. You know, just to win the Tony before the movie comes out.
Well,
I just think it's a pre-movie.
You know something? I'll tell you. I've seen so much crap this past year. I don't mind.
This is true.
That's a short tour of duty. It was a pleasure seeing this beautiful. Production.
It was a Fortella tour of duty.
Don't you want to see Lennon again?
I like Lennon.
Not in my life.
Okay, we're with Iris Dorbian on the WGBB Tony special. We're moving on to featured actor in a musical.
Yeah, that In My Life didn't get set. That was surprising.
Well, it was an interesting set.
It was weird.
Danny Burstyn, who's going to be on the phone in a couple of minutes, which is one of the reasons I've got to...
So we love him.
Yeah, we do, right. Win, Danny, for Drowsy Chaperone. Okay. Jim Dale, Three Penny Opera. Brandon Victor Dixon, The Color Purple. Manuel Falciano for Sweeney Todd. And Christian Hough, Jersey Boys. I'm so glad he got nominated. He was terrific.
Who did you mention before Jim Dale?
Danny Burstyn. Yay.
Okay.
And Brandon Victor Dixon, Color Purple. I thought you would have these in front of you, Iris. Preparation.
Okay. I think it could be Jim Dale, just because it's Jim Dale.
Right.
I wouldn't mind if it's Christian Hough.
Yes. I mean, aside from Danny Burstyn, of course.
He's my choice. I thought he was so good in that role.
Yeah. I mean, it was just...
And he's been around for quite a while, too.
If Drowsy does a real sweep, you know, he could get swept along, you know, and the judge...
Uh-oh. Iris? I hate cell phones.
We have temporarily lost Iris.
Oh, and Iris, I'm afraid we can't get you back because I've got to go call Danny Burstyn now and get him on the phone.
Ooh, because he's going to win for feature
night.
Can you hear me now?
This is not a Verizon commercial.
Yeah. Okay.
Iris, one last category.
Featured actress in a musical.
Read them.
Carolee Carmella for Lestat. Felicia P. Fields for Color Purple. Megan Lawrence for The Pajama Game. Beth Lovell for The Drowsy Chaperone. She is The Drowsy Chaperone.
Yes.
And Elizabeth Withers Mendez for The Color Purple.
All right. The Color Purple women cancel each other out. Beth Lavelle, The Drowsy Chaperone.
Really?
Yeah,
did you think she was that funny? Yeah.
I kind of agree with Dave that I didn't think that she was as funny as she could have been. But
I thought she was a piss.
I thought she was good, but I think it's about time we give something to Carolee Carmella too. Which I think
But the problem is that she's in a major bomb.
Well, yeah.
She was in a show that was so reviled. I mean, she was the only good thing in that show, and unfortunately, she'll suffer.
And she had that wonderful moment, though, when she pounces on that guy. The whole audience was able to laugh, finally, in that one little moment, you know?
Yeah, but unfortunately, she was in that dog of a show.
And then they cried. They sort of took a break.
So, Iris, your favorite show of the season? Favorite play? All you know, out of all of them.
So we'll put her down for Lennon.
No, History Boys is my favorite.
History Boys really is your favorite.
Really?
Favorite musical?
Oh.
Grey Gardens? No. Or Drowsy.
I'm torn between Jersey Boys because I thought it was a very good production, but it's still a jukebox musical. And also Drowsy Chaperone. I really enjoyed Drowsy Chaperone. I thought it was just a charming Valentine to musical theater.
Absolutely.
And how'd you like Tarzan?
Oh, you know, I just reviewed it. Oh, my God.
Apes on Bungie. Come on.
What a misfire. What a misfire.
Really?
I like when the plant feels up Jane. Remember that?
Yeah, that was kind of... Whole review of this whole thing is, like, humans really do ruin everything. As soon as they show up in that show, it just goes so totally wrong.
Well,
I like the
doll.
Cirque du Soleil aspect of the first act, the Flying Gorillas.
Yeah. And the then, gorillas were great, and the shipwreck was fantastic.
But then when they start talking, then the show is ruined.
Well, I'm afraid we have to stop talking now, Iris. It's been great having you, as always. People
Thank
can pick
you.
Up a copy of Stage Directions magazine. Is it on newsstands, or do they have to subscribe, or...?
Limited newsstand distribution. You can get it at Borders, Universal News, Barnes & Nobles, and also through subscription. It's www.stage-directions.com.
Well, thank you, Iris, for pointing us to Stage Directions. Have a great one. Happy Tony. Bye-bye.
And there went her cell phone.
From, I was going to say Whistle Down the Wind, but no, that of course was from Woman in White, the London cast recording. I don't think they ever did, or will do, a U.S. cast recording of that show. It was,
Well, because it basically came with most of the London cast.
Yeah, except you never got to see them.
That's right.
And Michael Ball was either out, or Maria Friedman was out for very, I mean, for legitimate reasons, but all the critics never got to see both of them together.
I did.
Oh, okay, you did, Jeff. But anyway, let's talk about a different show, a show that is still running, a show that
is much, much better.
Is much better, is doing Knockwood much better, that people seem to have really taken to their hearts in a way. I mean, they like other shows, but the critics especially seem to have...
It's a theater person's musical.
Yeah, and as Iris Dorbian just told us in the last segment, it's a Valentine to Broadway,
it is.
A Valentine to theater. And so, let's call this not only... pre-Tony Day, but Valentine's Day, as we give our hearts... my segues are horrible.
Whatever that means.
We have on the phone with us a Tony nominee from The Drowsy Chaperone for Best Featured Actor, Danny Burstein. Danny, are you there with us?
Yes, I am. Hey, David.
Danny, thanks so much for joining us. How has the Tony whirlwind been for you so far?
Oh, it's been wonderful. It really has been a lot of fun. So far,
yeah.
I was about to mention that the swag.
Well, what'd you get? What goodies?
Well, we got a free phone from Sprint for 3 months.
Is it one of those picture phones or just
it's a regular old cell phone. It's just crazy. The first thing I talk about is the swag.
That's okay. What else you get?
Visa gave us a nice gift certificate and box of chocolates and flowers and lots of bottles of champagne. And
so it does pay to be a Tony nominee.
Yeah,
it's not bad.
And next year you could present and get that gift bag.
Oh my goodness, I heard those gifts are pretty outrageous.
Maybe you could host since no one's hosting this year. I think you should host in character too.
I'll put in my bid.
Well, why don't you tell the folks what your character is in The Drowsy Chaperone?
Well, I play Aldolfo, the crazy Latin lover who's he's not very good at being a lover, and he's not very good at being Latin either.
But that's because he's not really Latin.
No, he isn't.
That's what I love about that show. Everyone has a backstory.
Exactly.
And how are the cats doing, by the way? That's all I can think of when I think of your character.
Oh, you mean the poodle?
That's right. That's because my fear was being eaten by my cat after I died. The poodles, how are they?
Oh, wonderful. Glad to say hello. Oh,
so how did you... approach that character? Did Bob Martin and the writers say to you, okay, we need a Latin lover who's like this, or was it sort of, here's Aldolfo, you create how he is?
That's basically what they did. They just said he was, they put European in quotes. And then, then they started to, and I started to do all sorts of different accents, and then one day they said, well, he was the Italian lover, and the other day, the next day they said he was the Latin lover, and so then the Latin lover stuck, no matter what, I'm actually an actor, Roman Bartelli, playing
right.
The character of Aldolfo.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, and he's supposed to be a master of many different accents, and all of them are, and all of them insulting. And so I had to make it big and bad and wrong and not very good. You walk a very fine line trying to find, what works with that. So I tried to make it, Hispanic, in Spanish with a big Latin kind of Cesar Romero kind of flair, but also a little bad too.
Well, give us a taste.
I am Aldolfo.
I love it.
You're my pick for Tony winner, by the way. I will be very disappointed if you don't get it.
Oh, God bless you.
I would say, what? You got to do the what. Do the what.
What?
I love that. That's like five times in the show, and it gets me every single time.
I was going home on the subway after a show the other day, and a woman came up to me. I don't know how she recognized me, but she came up to me and behind me and went, "What?" Surprise.
I mean, you. By the way, you as you said, you were on the subway. You are a born and bred New Yorker. I am.
Originally from the Bronx, and then my family moved to Queens when I was about 7 or 8, and grew up and, you know, went to public schools, and then went to the High School of Performing Arts here in New York, when it was the High School of Performing Arts on 46th Street, and
otherwise known as the Fame School.
Exactly right. And then went to Queens College, and.
Wow. Yeah. You, like, didn't leave the city, so...
No, I did. I went for my master's. I went to the University of California, San Diego.
Traeger.
So NYU wasn't good enough for you?
NYU. They didn't want me.
Oh.
What?
Actually, the UCSD had a great program out there, and the La Jolla Playhouse is in residence over there, and Des McAnuff.
Yeah, I was just going
to
say, my favorite
under his wing, and it was good.
But if you had gone to the Fame School, as it were, that means you chose pretty well early on.
Yeah.
When? I mean, what made it?
I did. Well, I was going to Parsons Junior High School in Flushing, and. My teacher, Stuart Glazer, my English teacher, said, you know, you've got something. You should really, and I was 13, he said, you should really audition for the High School of Performing Arts. And I said, that's great. What's the High School of Performing Arts?
Wow.
And he said, well, he explained it to me, and he said, you have to audition for it. And he said, there are over 4,000 kids audition every year, and they accept about 120.
Wow.
He said, you have to do a couple of monologues. And I said, great. What's the monologue? And,
do you remember the monologues you chose?
Oh, gosh, good question. I did a monologue. I did two. I did one from Dead End, and I think I did the other one was from The Time of Your Life, I believe.
Hmm.
And how were the auditions? Was it really as frightening as it would seem?
Oh, it was terrifying. Yeah, I'd never done anything like it before.
Because you're so young to be put in that pressure situation.
And you have these four very stern-looking teachers sitting in a room, and you just have to go in there and do your monologues for them.
Wow.
Yeah, it's quite a rigorous process.
And then you have to wait for the envelope at home?
Exactly right.
It's just like college, four years earlier.
Exactly, and I was so nervous I couldn't open the envelope. I had actually asked my dad to open the envelope for me.
Oh, well, how exciting, though.
When you came out of California and back to New York, what were your breaks? How did you get your name going?
Big thing I did was I did a revival of The Rothschilds off Broadway, Circle in the Square. Lonnie Price had directed the production, and it starred Mike Burstein. And
you're not related, right?
No, we're not. Actually, you know, his name is Burstein.
Burstein, B-U-R. He was a guest on my show last year.
Well,
that's
he spells it with a Y.
Yeah,
he spells it with a Y, but his family, he comes from a family of actors, and they theatricalized the spelling of it and put the Y in, but it's originally spelled like my name. And so he was very, you know, kind and took me under his wing and taught me a lot. And he said, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we are related. So he said, he noticed a lot of things that I did, you know, that, you know, he saw in his grandparents and things like that. So
wow.
Yeah.
And also there's a Lonnie Price connection that goes on further because you were a standby for him on A Class Act, which was one of my favorite musicals of the last, 10 years.
Yeah, it is a very, very special musical. And I was lucky enough to work on that show for a year.
Did you get on stage in it?
My God, a lot.
Oh, because he was out of it. Oh.
Yeah, well, you know what? He was writing the show, directing the show, and starring in the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's quite an effort to do something like that. And
at some point, you need a vacation.
At some point, you just need to sit back and watch the show and you know, and take notes. And so I actually got to go on a lot, and it was a wonderful experience because the show is so special, and it took
and
a wonderful,
had a wonderful
role.
Cast, too.
Oh,
yeah, it was fabulous. I don't know why it flopped. I don't know why.
Well, it didn't really flop. It's a very, again, it's another very theater person show.
Yeah.
And if it's not big and big, it was in a time where you had to be big and splashy.
You're absolutely
and
right.
It wasn't big and splashy. It was a very intimate musical. It was very personal.
Yeah, and it might have fared better in a larger off-Broadway house. and, you know, where we could hold on to the intimacy, because it actually started at the smaller space in Manhattan, at the Manhattan Theater Club.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, speaking of musicals that also didn't quite fare the way people thought they would, you were very directly involved in Barry Manilow's Harmony.
Mm-hmm.
What's the story on that? Where is it now?
I don't know where it is right now. I did the production, and my wife actually starred opposite me at that time.
Tell everyone who your wife is.
I'm married to Kitty Carlisle Hart.
You've used that joke before in interviews, and it still works.
How did you know that? I used it once before.
Well, it was the interview I read, so...
Oh, okay.
But no, no, not... Although Kitty Carlisle Hart is a lovely lady...
Yes, I adore her.
But to tell the truth...
I'm married to Rebecca Luker.
Yeah, imagine, listen, this guy gets to be on the funniest show, one of the funniest shows on Broadway, Tony nominated, and he gets to come home to Rebecca Luker.
I
Not
know.
Bad, huh?
Marion the Librarian.
Yeah, yeah.
Pinch me.
And the Secret Garden. She used to swing on the Secret Garden.
She was the original.
Yes, yeah. I know.
Is she a Tony winner? I should have looked this up.
She has not won. She was nominated twice for Showboat and for The Music Man.
Did she give you any tips on getting through all, you know, the next week or so?
Well, all I know is that when they announced my name, she jumped into my arms.
Aww.
And it was wonderful.
And you're not going to forget to thank her, are you?
Are you?
Because some people did do that.
Well, if she gets nominated, then you have to jump into her arms. So
exactly,
that's going to be
right.
Interesting. Yeah.
If I'm lucky enough to be, to win, which I don't think, you know, I have no, I'm not preparing a speech, you know, or anything
well,
like
sure
that.
Sure, you're not.
I'm not. I'm truly not. If that happens to happen, then I'll just try and, you know, speak from the heart, and I'm sure I won't forget her.
Speaking generalities very quickly, because you only have like 30 seconds, right? I love you all.
The orchestra plays you off.
But, Danny, if they announce you, if you do win,
mm-hmm.
take a long time going up to the stage, because doesn't your time start when you get in front of the microphone?
No, actually, it starts as soon as they call your name.
Wow. Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what they told us. So we had some kind of a luncheon, Tony luncheon. They said, you know, you have a minute and 10 seconds or a minute and 20 seconds from the time they call your name. So they encourage you to bound up to the stage as quickly as possible.
Do they at least put everybody on the aisles at least? I mean, that would make sense.
Yeah, that's usually what they do.
So are you going to take time to kiss your wife before you go? Or are you
Pat her on the one kiss and then, you know, slap hands as I run up.
And are you going to frame the certificates and put them together on the wall?
You know what? They give it to you framed.
Oh, really?
Already, yeah. They have the same kind of silver frame, and you know, I must confess, they're already on the wall, you know.
Yay!
All of them.
Well, please, I have the space all reserved. I'll never get anything, but it's all reserved.
Well, here you are at probably one of the best Knockwood points of your life, you know, certainly career-wise.
Yeah.
And also,
oh,
you've got kids
coming.
Kids in life. Well, maybe, yeah. But I'm saying, was there a point in your career that you never thought it would get to this, where you thought, oh, I'm going to give up and go be something else? And, you know, you've got to get someone to tell you, no, stick with it.
Actually, I never thought that I would ever do anything. Here's the, you know, the sad truth is I'm not good at anything else. I love doing it, and I could never imagine myself doing anything else. There have been times where, you know, after you finish a job, and every actor, you know, will tell you this, after you finish a job, you know, you get your last paycheck and you think, I'll never work again.
Oh, wait a second. How was Law and Order?
Oh, I've been on a bunch of times.
I know. Well, every New York actor's been on Law and Order. So you'll always work again as long as there's Law and Order.
Yeah, it's good. And this last year, it's crazy. This last year I was on, I was in a movie called Transamerica with Felicity Huffman.
Oh, really? Oh,
and
I love that.
Yeah.
Were you a man or a woman?
I was a man.
But who were you in this?
I played her doctor at the beginning of the film, you know, I actually had a beard and glasses in that.
Yeah, oh my God, I would never recognize.
Yeah. I know, nobody ever does. And that's kind of the thing that I love about being an actor. I mean, for, you know, my idea of being an actor is, you know, people don't know who you are, and people don't recognize you as you walk out the stage door, and people didn't realize that was you in the film. You know, and that's kind of a huge compliment to me. You know, it means I'm doing my job. And
well, Danny, I just want you to know, I actually saw that film in Bangkok, Thailand.
Really?
It was playing in a really huge theater. It was well attended, and people loved it.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, half the people there were actually transvestites. Not that you can
tell. Actually, it is very big in Thailand.
Yeah.
But
wow.
But they, I was really surprised that they got the whole movie.
Yeah.
And they thought you were fabulous, by the way. Because, you know, it's actor in the beginning. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, it was unbelievable.
When they first saw you on the screen, the whole audience en masse said, what? Because they knew. They could
this
tell.
Has to be a new calling card, right, Danny?
Exactly. So the neat thing about it was that they showed it at the Oscars as well.
Oh,
that
wow.
clip. I don't know why they chose that clip, but so
because
year,
you were in it.
Well, maybe. Well, then this year I'll be in the Oscars and the Tonys. So that's kind of cool.
But we want to hear you talk at the Tonys. I do.
Knock wood. Now, if you win, and
I do. That's
great,
right.
Wood.
I shouldn't give you a Kanahara. I'm sorry.
Hey, Danny would know what that word means.
Of
too.
Course he would.
One last question for Danny Burstyn before, unfortunately, we have to let you go.
Okay.
But yes, right now your life is occupied with a drowsy chaperone. It's been running for a few weeks, and God willing, it'll do great, and you'll stay with it. But what's on the horizon, and what kind of roles have you ever thought about playing?
What's down the road for Danny Burstyn?
What's down the road? Actually, I have nothing lined up. I just did a workshop of Jason Robert Brown's newest musical that he's working on, Honeymoon in Vegas. Mm-hmm. And but you know who knows.
That's based on the film.
Yeah.
Wow.
And written with Andrew Bergman, and it's kind of wonderful. And but you know who knows when that'll happen.
But you ever want to leave the show? I think this.
Well, right now I'm very very happy to be.
Because I love you, you're perfect in the show. Don't change.
Which I did for a year.
Yes, I know.
He wasn't an original cast member, but he came in after Jordan Leeds left, and he was there for quite a while.
Exactly.
And by
right.
the way, sorry. Yes.
No, Jordan left after about I think after the first week or two. And they, you know, and I took over for him right after they opened. And they asked me to do the original cast album.
Cool.
That was lovely, too.
And I do have to ask, what is Rebecca Luker working on these days?
Well, she just finished her second gig at Feinstein's and got some, you know, just tremendous reviews for that. And this summer she's doing a new play by A.R. Gurney. Who has become a friend of ours. I did a play of his at the Flea Theater with Sigourney Weaver and John Lithgow about a year and a half ago.
Oh, Mrs. Farnsworth, right?
Mrs. Farnsworth, exactly right. And she's doing a play of his called Indian Blood at Primary Stages this summer.
Yes, I read about that.
Yeah, Pamela Peyton Wright is in it and John McMartin.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And after she literally, I think she starts rehearsal while she's still in performances for that play for Mary Poppins, which she's going to be doing on Broadway in the fall.
Who's she going to be in Mary Poppins?
She's going to play Mrs. Banks.
Oh.
Yeah.
How what, the mother.
Exactly right. Love. They actually, Glynis Johns played it in the film.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Oh, you've been two hit shows at the same time.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
It doesn't get better
Well,
than
do
that.
Give her our best, too, because I love her, too.
Yeah, she's all right.
Ever since The Secret Garden Swing.
Oh.
I just wanted to be on the swing.
I won't even ask. Okay.
That's right.
But Danny Burstyn, it's been great swinging with you this past 15, 20 minutes.
Pleasure's all mine.
Best of luck next week. Best of luck in all your stuff. And congratulations on being in a really, really fun show.
Oh, thanks so much, Dave.
And thank you for being here.
Oh, my pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Take care, guys.
Bye.
And we are into the third hour of the WGBB Second Annual Tony Awards Special. Thank you so much for staying with us, if you've been with us since 9. Welcome to everyone who normally tunes in at this time for my regular weekly show, Dave's Gone By. I'm Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, theater critic, journalist, humorist, and tonight's host for the WGBB Tony Awards Special. Very proud to be here. Got to thank a few people before we go on, just in case I don't get to thank them at the end of the show. Let's see. Who am I thanking? Here's Jeff Goodman, my co-host.
Would you like to thank Minuteman Press?
You betcha. You let Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway in Hewlett.
And I think you should also thank MortgagesRock.com.
You know, yes, because why? You know why?
Why?
Not just because it's the place to go for a mortgage, but because it's the place to go where they'll teach you how to help other people get funding, mortgages, funding for college loans. Maybe you want to redo the house. MortgagesRock.com. Is that
really rocks?
Yes. You know what? Wait, I've got to figure out their slogan here. Mortgages rock because, I say it every week.
Because they're stoned.
Something making money never sounded so good. Okay. My slogan, it's theirs, but there
you
go.
How about PAI?
Yes, that's Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine.
Never heard of
it. Oh, yes, you have.
What is that?
You're a subscriber, Jeff.
It
thank
sounds
you.
So interesting.
Well, since you read it, why don't you tell the folks what Performing Arts Insider is?
Oh, it is the definitive theater industry magazine that tells you all about all that you ever will need to know about Broadway and off-Broadway theater, as well as insightful and informative reviews.
Thank you, thank you. And people can find out about Performing Arts Insider at the website performingartsinsider.com. Full disclosure, I'm the co-publisher of Performing Arts Insider.
And it's only $1,000 a year.
No, it's not. It's a little lower, I think, than our competition, and better than our competition.
It really is a wonderful resource for anyone who is thinking about becoming a theatrical theatrical professional. You really need this. It's a good tool.
Thank you very much. And speaking of good tools, Jeff Goodman, you've been marvelous.
What?
We've had some great guests on already. I mean, we've heard from everyone from playwright Jeffrey Sweet to Connecticut theater critic Rosalind Friedman. We've got Jeannie Lieberman coming up. She's a critic on the internet.
You forgot Charlie Gross.
Charlie Gross. Eva Heinemann called in. And we have, of course, Tony-nominated actor,
Danny
Burstyn. That was
yay!
Such a nice fella.
So, and we're crossing fingers right now because we hope he wins.
Well, yeah, I mean, I like Christian Hoff and Jersey Boys.
I like him.
Well,
Danny
Burstyn's really
fun,
yeah.
What? You didn't like...
But let's get to our new special guest on the phone with us. He is a critic from New Jersey. He's written not only for TogleTheater.com, he's written for US 1 newspapers in New Jersey, and he is currently the president of the Outer Critics Circle Awards. Now, the Tonys aren't the only New York Theater Awards, just in case people aren't that familiar with all. There's the Drama Desk, the New York Drama Critics Circle, there's the Lucille Lortel Awards, the Obie Awards for Off-Broadway. They all have different kind of things and rules. There's the Pulitzer Prize for Drama, which wasn't even awarded this year. So the Outer Critics Circle covers Broadway and Off-Broadway together, In a certain kind of a way, but we'll have the president, Simon Saltzman, tell us all about it. Simon, you there?
I sure am, David.
Hey.
Thanks so much for having me on your show.
I have to make
a correction, though.
Go
I am not the president. I am the acting president of Outer Critics Circle. And the reason they gave me that title is to make sure every day I remind myself that I shouldn't be the overacting president.
Oh.
And if you do a really good job, you could be nominated for a Tony Award.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And also, hey, to Jeff, it's nice to be invited to a menage a trois. I haven't had that pleasure in a while.
Simon, you
when did you? Whoa, Lucianne, you freaking
well,
girl.
Simon, did you live through those 60s too?
She's listening on the computer. I locked myself in a different room. So, by the way, I'm not using a cell phone. Isn't that great? So we don't have to worry about being disconnected.
That's wonderful.
But I'll send you the bill.
Thank you for using the landline.
And you don't have to worry about being kicked out of History Boys either.
Right.
Exactly right.
So, Simon,
I want to go back to one thing before
sure.
we get started on the categories that you asked me to discuss. Jeffrey Sweet was talking about a play by Nicky Silver that he loved. The play was Beautiful Child, and I agree with him. It was one of the most amazing, memorable plays. I think it's maybe his finest play. I'm a Nicky Silver fan.
Oh, me too.
But I thought that play was really unnecessarily trashed.
I was one of the people trashing it. I loathed it.
Really? Well, I think there are two schools of thought on that. I thought it was a very, very... deeply committed play to the theme that he was dealing with. It was magnificently acted. Well, we don't have to belabor that.
Do you like Edward Albee?
Do I like Edward Albee?
Yeah, do you like his work
in
general?
Man.
Of course I do.
I mean, not just Virginia Woolf, but
did you like Seascape? Is a good question.
Because if you like Albee, you would have liked Beautiful Child, I think. It appeals to the same... Hello?
Yeah, I'm right here. I'm listening. I have very mixed feelings about Seascape. I'm not in that corner.
Well, anyway, let's talk about the two categories that we have lined up.
Biggies.
Big ones for Simon Saltzman. Leading actor in a musical, we have Michael Cerveris, Sweeney Todd, Harry Connick Jr., The Pajama Game, Stephen Lynch, The Wedding Singer, Bob Martin, The Drowsy Chaperone, and John Lloyd Young, Jersey Boys. Simon, what are your thoughts?
Oh, God, this is rough because I think I really liked all of them. You're probably going to want a
My
so it's like all Stephen Lynch all the time, is that it?
I like all of them. Certainly, you know, it seems to me everybody that plays Sweeney gets a nomination. That seems to come with the territory. And Michael Cerveris is just amazing in the role.
Do you think his winning last year will hurt his chances this year?
Probably. You know, they'll probably say enough is enough. Bob Martin is also incredible in Chaperone. He's a real find, and certainly he's the hilarious center of the show.
But do you think that the fact that he doesn't sing?
I think it might help. It might actually help.
Really?
Yeah.
I kind of personally would be kind of upset, although I loved him. I just don't want to see him win because I don't want to see someone who doesn't sing get that back during the musical.
Yeah.
Well, I understand your point, but he is the heart and the soul of this show.
Oh, absolutely.
And as a matter of fact, as far as I'm concerned, the performance that he gives is the equivalent of a singing performance. I mean, he sings for me. That performance was just so lyrical.
Hmm.
And
well, it touches home with a lot of us. Anyone who's ever sat with their records, who takes care of the records and listens to their old albums, all the old shows.
He plays a character that I think many of us can, if not personally relate to, knows the guy next door that's this character.
Mm-hmm,
and certainly those of us that are so closely connected to the
But industry. Doesn't that go to the writing of the show rather than the acting?
I think the ensemble is so connected.
Mm-hmm.
The whole piece is such a beautifully put together original piece, from the music to the book to the performances. I think you could feel the love and the incredible comradeship in this show.
Mm-hmm. So is Bob Martin your choice for leading actor in a musical?
No, my leading choice. And if we're gonna skip over Stephen Lynch, who is incredible, is really wonderful in the Wedding Singer.
Oh, I'm so glad. So I'm really glad that people
like
nice stuff.
Oh, he was wonderful. I wish I could.
I thought they all were actually. I thought the whole cast of Wedding Singer was pretty good.
I enjoyed the show. I mean, it's inane. Mm-hmm. It's silly. It's it's a ridiculous show, but it's very, very entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
Very entertaining.
Sometimes you just want to turn your mind off and say, let me see a fun show.
Exactly.
And I hope it does well.
I think word of mouth is very good on this show, from what I can gather.
Good, good.
Well, it's the big bridge and truck people who can't get tickets to Jersey Boys if it's sold out.
Right.
That's what they're going to go see, is Wedding Singer. But, so you were going to say you were...
So then we have to go on to Harry Connick Jr., who is incredible.
Yeah.
And
well, fabulous singer, but I don't know about the acting so much.
Well... I enjoyed the performance. It was also a performance that made you sit up and watch and really care. First of all, he sounds like old Blue Eyes when
yes.
he sings. That's a plus right there. But I thought he was dynamic on the stage and really made the Pajama Game. It's one of my favorite musicals. Talking about Drowsy Chaperone and a guy playing an album. I remember as a teenager when Pajama Game opened, that's giving away something, playing that album till you couldn't hear it anymore. I played it constantly over and over. So, I mean, it's a show.
Tell me,
yeah, well, listen,
woman, I'll tell you.
Tell me what's
your
favorite
man who loved a woman.
Oh, that's great.
She was
one, he threw a dragon ball. Am I allowed to admit that I saw Janet Paige and John Raiden in the original?
Sure.
But me, I love you more.
Tell me,
it was great. But I think, I guess we're going to get back to John
Raiden. I feel
Lloyd
like
Young
a teenager again now.
And that performance was tops. I think he's a shoo-in.
Really?
I don't think there's any competition there, frankly. I think it's because the combination of not only the singing, but the depth of the acting. This is a performance that really transcends the general musical comedy performance or the musical theater performance expectations. I think I had the pleasure of seeing it twice, and I was able to really appreciate the work, the technique, and the complete commitment that John has to the role of Frankie Valli.
Jeff, who's your choice for leading actor in a musical?
You know, this is one of those... It's a very funny year. There's either all these categories that I really don't care about. Just like, who cares? But this is one that they have so many good people.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Michael Cerveris, but again, he did win last year, and, you know, why give him two in a row? Make him work again
exactly.
Next year, you know?
Well, don't you feel that it's a shoo-in for John Lloyd Young?
It sort of is because people really, really love the show. However, it's the Bob Martin thing again. I loved his performance, but I don't know if I really want him to win. But I think it's going to be between Bob Martin and John Lloyd Young, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, well, that's right, but I think that John is going to do it.
I think probably.
Yeah. I mean, we saw it the second time with a real audience, not the usual press crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And those people were just going.
Well, he's very good.
Bananas.
And now there are five women who are pretty good in their job, too.
Not bad.
Which are vying for leading actress in a musical. And the nominees are Sutton Foster in The Drowsy Chaperone, LaChance for The Color Purple, Patti LuPone in Sweeney Todd, Kelly O'Hara for The Pajama Game, and Cheetah Rivera as herself in Cheetah Rivera, A Dance's Life. I think that was a stretch of an acting job there, wasn't it?
I think so.
I mean,
in a sense, she was. I think that's just sort of filling out the category. We've got a lot of that, but we don't have to belabor that point either. You know, that filling out the category.
Yeah, but shouldn't that have been a special event?
Right.
Shouldn't she have been nominated for special?
Absolutely.
It was like a granting carte blanche to Sarah Jones.
Yeah,
from Bridgerton.
That's the one thing about this year's nominating committee. I think they unnecessarily really dropped a lot of shows that could have been in there. But they really are pushing for Drowsy Chaperone to sweep in their nominations.
Well, I think it could easily be, you know, the Avenue Q of this year. Because I think up until the time that Drowsy opened, certainly the favorite was
Jersey
Boys.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't think it's anything like Avenue Q, because I think a
I'm talking about the musical that starts out with little fanfare.
Right, but even when it was up for the Tony, a Tony Awards night, people still thought Wicked was going to win.
Exactly.
I mean, and I think most people kind of know that. I mean, I think that Drowsy Chaperone's going to win Best Musical and pretty much sweep.
Really?
The only thing that's going to stop that is, you know, there's a huge block of producers from Middle America, and once you get past the metropolitan area,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to have a lot of people that are really going to dig the whole theme, concept, and aura that Drowsy Chaperone creates. It's a very, definitely a big city show. Whereas Jersey Boys is the kind of show that every theater in across the country is going to want to have in their theaters.
But what if, you put it this way, Jersey Boys is a guaranteed lock to tour and for people to love everywhere.
Yeah.
Maybe they want Drowsy Chaperone to get the Tony win so that they can say the Tony win, Drowsy Chaperone, and make it more appealing.
And isn't it really more of a show? It's original.
But let's get back to the women, by the way.
Sorry.
Yeah, we somehow
sidetracked. Well, I hope the Tony voters are not going to forget the really great performance LaChance is giving in The Color Purple. I know there are many that don't think that it's a great show, but when you think of the sprawling story that it gives, the chance that LaChance has to grow and to evolve over the course of an evening.
I didn't buy her as an old woman. I saw an actress playing an old woman gumming her food and stuff.
But she did do a great... She really did a very good job in the role. It's a tough, tough role.
Yeah.
But you're right. I also, at her old age... And,
I'd like to see her win it. I'd like to see her win it.
Really?
Because Patti LuPone is astonishing as Mrs. Lovett and Sweeney.
Because that's all we thought.
Yeah, I mean, but that, you know, it's sort of like, sure, she did what we knew she could do. Sutton Foster's eccentric with all that acrobatic dancing and Chaperone, that stopped the show in its tracks, and it was hard for her to stop it considering her co-star there, although it's a title role, it's really a supporting role. Best level is a showstopper. Those are two amazing performances, but I don't know if...
But she's not really... She doesn't really have a leading role.
I know.
It just feels more of like an ensemble.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the categories they really should have is Best Ensemble, just the way the Outer Critics Circle has the Best Ensemble.
We do on occasion. We didn't have it this year for some weird reason. I don't know why. Oh, I know why. For the first year, the Outer Critics decided to have an outstanding new score, which we never had before, and we're thrilled to have that. And I'm in, because I I worked very hard to get, I campaigned for that, if that's the right word. And, of course, Drowsy did it, those two great composers. I think the score is wonderful, by the way. I can't wait to own it and play it in the car.
Let me ask play your record all the time.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Simon, you were at the Outer Critics Circle Awards, what was it, a week or two ago?
Not only at them, I presided over them.
You presided, yeah.
But actingly.
Any great...
Oh, not without overacting.
Any great quotes, any great thoughts or memories from that evening?
Oh, the food was excellent for a change.
Well,
aside from
that, where was for a change? Oh.
No, they came through for us. They had a really wonderful dinner.
Where was it held?
At Sardi's, in the Eugenia Room.
Very nice.
Fourth floor. It was my first year, and it was a difficult undertaking for me, especially getting everybody seated at the tables they wanted to sit at. The nice thing about Outer Critics is that the press are seated with the stars, the celebrities, it's like a party. So there's no separation, there's no class distinction, as it were. And we, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, somehow I...
No, we're here.
Okay. You know, and everybody schmoozes and parties, and there's no TV. The conversations are light, and, you know, everybody's on their...
It's a very comfortable
behavior, but relaxed.
Okay, Simon.
Enjoying each other's company.
One last question, actually, before we let you go. We have this next category. Stay with us while we do it, because I want to hear your thoughts on revival of a musical. Now, there were only three listed. I think there were only three revivals of a musical done on Broadway this year. The Pajama Game, Sweeney Todd, and Three Penny Opera. So, there should only be two up there, but yeah.
So you like Three Penny Opera.
Oh, God.
I thought it was dreadful.
Yeah, no, it was awful. It was horrendous. There's a reason they all come out for curtain calls at the end of those three
hours. Well, isn't there some discussion as to whether the category should actually be filled out just for the sake of filling it out, even if a show gets panned by everybody?
Well, I mean, there's only three in there, as opposed to normally there's room for four or five. So on some level, they made
someone
it.
Someone must have liked it, but then they also tended to like that, what was that, the roundabout thing that...
But you know, talking about filling out a category.
Yeah.
If I can say just one more thing before we're finished, when I think back over the off-Broadway season, which you asked me to think about too, there were so many amazing plays that I could think of a dozen that would have filled out even more excitingly the Broadway roster.
Grey Gardens.
There was The Privilege by Paul Weitz. Orson's Shadow, Pendleton's wonderful play, BFE, Julia Cho. Then there was Alan Ayckbourn's play, Private Fears in Public Places. Mm-hmm. That probably would have won had it moved to Broadway. I think there's still talk about that.
Yeah,
what about Christopher Durang's very, very funny farce, Miss Witherspoon?
Huh.
And the intelligent design of Jenny Chow. I could go on and on. I mean, Wendy Wasserstein's play, Third.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
You're pushing it now, Simon.
No, I don't think so. Nilo Cruz's beautifully written play, Beauty of the Father. The Little Dog Laughed.
That's coming to Broadway next season.
Yeah.
They're going to move
out. I don't know whether it's going to make it. That's a tough sell, but for me, it was a great centered performance there. You know?
Okay. But Simon, you didn't actually answer about revival of a musical. Which would you go for, and which are they going to pick?
It's basically Pajama Game or Sweeney
it's
Todd.
It's got to be. I think it's going to be Sweeney Todd.
You think so?
Yeah, I wouldn't be disappointed if Pajama Game won, but I have a feeling there's just such a feeling about unusual, how creative, how
bizarre. Next year when Company comes, not so much.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting when John Doyle directs Company and we start to say, well, wait, this is his style. He always strips everything down and turns props into five different things. It wasn't that special. Yeah, you know, it was just new to it.
Right.
Maybe.
You know, and the other thing, because we're not going to discuss that, is this cutoff date business for awards. I just came back from seeing a play this afternoon on 42nd Street on Theater Row by a playwright called Nilaja's Son. It's called No Child. Did either of you see it?
No.
You must promise me you're going to go see it. It closes next week.
Aye.
To me, it was one of the best plays of the year. Absolutely amazing. She does, in a way, what Sarah Jones is doing. She's playing a multitude of characters. I think it's about 17. She plays a school teacher, principal, a janitor, and these kids in a Bronx high school. But it's brilliantly.
Is it a solo performance?
And you really have to go.
It's a solo performance?
And, pardon me?
It's a solo performance?
Solo performance.
And what are you talking about cutoff dates now? What did that have?
Well, in other words, there are shows that open after our cutoff date for Out of Critics was April the 22nd. You know, there were many, many shows that, you know, that opened in that weird period between April. See, the season years ago used to be June 1st.
Right.
To May 31st. And now there's this sort of no man's land.
Yeah. How did you feel about extending the Tony deadline for Tarzan? Of all things, they had, Disney said
it was ridiculous.
They extended it just because Tarzan said we're not going to be ready to open.
Wow.
And I kind of thought that was kind of wrong. But has the Out of Critics Circle ever thought about having their award ceremony after the Tonys then?
We've traditionally been first. We're
right,
first
I know.
Before the drama desk.
A lot of things, sometimes, like I remember years ago, things would win that weren't even open. You know, that was, you know, when Marjorie Gunner was president. Things would just...
Well, but there was also the problem...
No, they didn't win before they opened. They could have been nominated. That's why we have a nominating committee, and we go to early previews. They're not for reviewing purposes.
No, but what was happening with Out of Critics Circle was the awards came so early, and the cutoffs and deadlines were so early, that, you know, there would be five Broadway shows that would be schlunked into next
season. We don't
season.
Do that anymore.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah, we
I
don't do that anymore.
It's a very wise move. And Simon, it's been a wise and wonderful move for you to be with us on the WGBB Tony Awards special.
Well, thank you.
And please remind people not only the fact that, you know, you're acting president of the Out of Critics Circle, but where can
not
I...
Not overacting.
Not overacting.
You didn't ask me about the worst of Broadway this year.
All right, real quick, Simon. You got 1 minute.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, what did you hate? I should have asked more of that.
I'm one of the few that didn't like Shining City. I thought it was just
okay.
A total bore. And I found Faith Hiller quite boring, and
a lot of people
very
did.
Dark and murky. All those dark and murky musings, you know.
But you love the Blonde and the Thunderbird, right?
I like the Blonde and the Thunderbird, yeah. But
Whoa! Are you joking now?
Of course I'm joking.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I was out of town when the show opened.
We wish we all were.
And closed.
But thank you for being in town with us for the Tony Show, Simon Saltzman.
Well, I thank you.
A pleasure always. Have a great one, man.
Thank you. Good night, guys.
Good night, Simon.
Well, we talked about the Revival's Pajama Game, Sweeney Todd, and Three Penny Opera. And I think most people kind of hated Three Penny Opera, and just for various reasons. That one doesn't have a cast album yet either. I think it will.
Yes, it's coming out.
It's coming out. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I didn't like Nellie McKay so much in it, although I got her solo album, and it's got some interesting stuff on it. But, I'm doing this long lead-in to a song that is in there called Tango Ballad. It's called something else because they changed all the titles in this new Three Penny.
It's a new... translation.
Right. And nothing wrong with that, except it's a really bad and vulgar translation. But here's a translation I kind of like, a version of a song in Three Penny Opera called Tango Ballad that comes from an album that Uta Lemper did. Now, it's a very weird album. She's sometimes great and she's sometimes really irritating.
And she's a lot of time in Chicago.
Right. But she's not in Chicago now. Well, maybe she is. But
she'll probably be coming back. She came back like four times already.
Here's a duet that she sings on stage. It's done with, in the new version, Cyndi Lauper and what's his name? The Scottish, the lead. You know, from Cabaret.
I know. I can see him. Skinny guy.
Yeah.
Him.
Weird hair and then the
right.
Earrings. Well, anyway, they do it, and they do a pretty, it's one of the better moments in Three Penny Opera. But this is the version with Uta Lemper singing with Neil Hannon. He's a member of the Divine Comedy rock group, and I like it quite a lot. It's from the Punishing Kiss album, Tango Ballad. And we are into the very last half hour of the WGBB second annual Tony Awards special.
You mean it's almost over?
It's almost... Well, we've got 1/9 left, 1/6 left, but we'll make it count. It's a big... wonderful half hour. We have
a big finish.
Yeah, well, there we go. With a big tool, I think we were talking about before. I don't know what that means. See, after 11, we can do more stuff. Not quite
let's call, what's her name?
Oh, we've had some interesting people, wonderful guests on tonight. All sorts of critics, including Roz Friedman, Jeannie Lieberman, Charles Gross, my co-host Jeff Goodman from Two on the Isle. Just got through Simon Saltzman, who is the acting president of the
Outer Critics. And who cursed
us? Well, it didn't actually go through on the air. I hit the delay button fast enough. But Eva Heinemann talked about her.
Eva shouldn't be cursing like that.
I know. She should know. Well, she's on cable, so you can. So I guess she's not used to opening on radio. Well, anyway. But I'm sure here's someone who will absolutely be the soul of discretion and charm and good language. She is a theater critic for a website called TheaterScene.net. T-H-E-A-T-E-R, scene.net. Her name is Jeannie Lieberman, and she's going to weigh in on a couple of different categories, Tony nominations. Jeannie, are you with us?
I am definitely with you and raring to go.
And there's no cursing.
Already.
We'll have none of that.
It's nice to follow Simon because he is my acting president on OCC. My colleague.
Does he overact, though?
Hmm?
Does he overact?
Sometimes. He's my colleague on Drama Desk. He is one of my writers on TheaterScene.net.
Oh, I didn't know. Cool. He covers New Jersey theater?
And sometimes New York. Yeah.
Great.
I love his opinions.
And we hear he really liked the show on 42nd Street recently.
Which one? Which one?
Oh, see, you weren't listening.
Oh, by the way, we quiz our guest.
The Thunderbird Girl?
he was listening.
The Thunderbird Girl? You mean you don't know who that is?
Whatever.
Suzanne Summers.
You know.
Okay.
I guess you don't own a Thigh Master, do you?
I thought, you know...
she was once married to one. But, you know, no, I don't know what that means. I don't know what
Boys,
that means. I know.
We have business here.
Yes, two business. Jeff, you want to read the nominations, please, for orchestrations?
I would love to.
Please.
Because my favorite category is always the orchestrations of a musical. The nominees this time are Larry Blank for The Drowsy Chaperone, Dick Lieb and Danny Troob for The Pajama Game, Steve Orich for Jersey Boys, and Sarah Travis, who took away from Sweeney Todd.
I see she did.
Because it wasn't really orchestrating, it was like de-orchestrating the musical.
Exactly. But, you know, before we get to that, I chose this category because I don't think anybody really understands it. And so I contacted my good friend Don Pippin, who won the only Tony Award for Music Director in 1963 for Oliver. And I asked him, I said, you know, why orchestrators and not why was your category dropped as music director, and what is the difference, and what does everyone do? And he explained it this way. He said, the music director is really the liaison between the composer and the entire musical production. The composer comes to the music director with his musical ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's simple, sometimes it's depending on the composer. And so then they discuss the content, the mood, the tempo, the intention of the music, and then the director works with the stage director and the choreographer.
Mm-hmm.
He rehearses. He's in on the casting procedure so that the right performers can sing. You know, will enhance the music, and then usually he can also be the vocal arranger and the dance music arranger. If he's usually though, they definitely conduct.
And the orchestrator.
He could be the orchestrator, but what they do usually is suggest.
But what is the main difference between the music director and the orchestrator?
Well, it's like the president of the company and the secretary. I'm sorry to say that. But once all of this has been worked out, when the actors have been rehearsed and the
mm-hmm.
vocal, and the everything is set up, the staging, the sequence, the tempo and everything, then you go to the orchestrator, who fleshes it all out. He puts the actual music on the chart, you know, decides.
Yeah, I thought the orchestrator takes the actual piano music, that is what the composer writes it as. This is the way my simple mind goes. It takes the piano music and then basically writes it in different parts for each piece
of
the orchestra.
He does, but there are many processes in between, you know, before it's ready to be orchestrated. And that's what's worked out in the creative design and structure of the musical.
But that, is that the composer or is that the musical director?
The musical director with the composer.
Oh.
And then when it's all fleshed out and it's, you know, everyone's rehearsed, then they bring in the orchestra and they, you know, and that's the finished product. So when somebody comes into the theater, they don't really know who contributed what, you know, to what
right,
they hear.
Right.
That's why the category is kind of embarrassing. because he had once asked Isabel Stevens, Don Pippin, you know, he said, well, why did you drop the category of musical director and in favor of orchestrator? And he said, she said, because no one knows what the musical director is.
An orchestrator sounds like such a cool job.
And also, Isabel Stevenson was so old at that point, she was dropping everything. So, no, I don't know what that means.
Very possible.
So we got to get to the actual category.
Well, so but this is, you know, so what is reflected in the nomination.
So you're like, you're going to go protest against the whole thing and not vote, huh? You go protest against the whole category, right?
No, not at all. But the ignorance of what an orchestrator does and the voters and the nominators is reflected in the nominations.
Right.
So, okay, what do we have of four categories, four nominations? We only have one original musical.
Right.
And that's from the beginning to the end. That's taken a show from scratch.
But, of course, Jersey Boys also had, all those songs had to be orchestrated.
Not necessarily. The focus was to keep it meticulously reproduce that sound and then augment it.
Yeah, I agree on that.
That's true.
So that's not very creative. Now you take Sweeney Todd. They took an entire...
I feel like the teacher is talking to me now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I get a little passionate on this, you know, because I know you want to talk about best actor.
Well, don't tell Don Pippin I said that. Tell him he's right.
Well, he's listening.
I'm sure he is right. Yeah.
He's listening, I'm sure.
Don, I'm sorry.
Isabel, I'm sorry if you're listening from wherever you are.
Well, anyway...
So pick one.
It's kind of stupid because, you know...
Well, okay.
So the only one that's legitimate is Drowsy Chaperone.
So you think Larry Blank should get it?
Absolutely. And I also think that, you know, Wedding Singer should have been in there. And Color Purple, because these are original musicals.
Okay.
You know, so...
Okay,
and how about leading actor in a play? Which is Ralph Fiennes for Faith Healer, Richard Griffiths from The History Boys... I can never get Zelvienko Ivanek. Is that how you pronounce it?
Something like
that.
Zelvienko. I don't know.
Fiennes, by the way. Rafe.
I keep doing that. Every time I know it's Rafe Fiennes, and I keep reading Ralph because it's on the paper it says Ralph.
I had it done phonetically for me, so I went and screwed up.
See, well, I don't know. Dave doesn't do that.
No.
I'm not hooked on phonics here. And then we also have Oliver Platt from Shining City and David Wilmot from The Lieutenant of Inishmore.
And, you know, I couldn't have cared
less.
Well,
to quote one of the author's previous plays, we're sorry for that. And we're sorry for that.
Now, Rafe Fiennes, he is has the panache of a British superstar. And basically, he's pretty depressing in every movie I've seen. He's depressed and depressing. And so he was in The Faith Healer. It's a monologue.
Did you think he was better in Hamlet?
Well, yes, but this is in this play. You know, he's definitely a fine actor, but this was a monologue. You know, the definition of acting is to interact, and it was a monologue, and it was so obscure anyway. I defy you to tell me what really happened.
I just got hit on the wrist with that ruler again.
Oh boy, a lot of people today did not like Faith Healer. I find myself in this weird position of defending the play and not quite the production, but okay.
Well, can you tell me what happened at the end?
Off the air when we have time, yeah. Well, I've seen the play two or three times, but...
Well, nobody's ever been able to explain it to me.
Oh, absolutely.
And I actually stayed awake.
He got beaten to death. Okay, I just saved you 2 hours and 45 minutes. So, at the end of the day, he's beaten to death by these people because he's not able to heal a guy. There you go.
Okay.
And how about Richard Griffiths?
Well, let's go with...
Well, first of all, let's turn off ourselves.
Zelko Ivanek. You know, he did a fine...
So you now pronounce his name better than I did, too.
I'm sorry,
Zelko
that Zelko
Ivanek. I practiced that before.
Kane Newton should have gotten more nominations, I think, in a bunch of different things.
I
think
Kane Newton.
It got a very short shrift this year.
I thought it did. I thought it was a wonderful play. But I think that I couldn't erase the Humphrey Bogart image when I watched him. You know, it just didn't eclipse Bogey with as Captain Queeg. I would think that Oliver Platt gave the breakout performance of the season.
Really?
And of his career. Well, you know, the play is really nothing more than a ghost story. It's very thin plot. And McPherson specializes in these Irish yarns. So a yarn and a ghost story is as good as the person who's telling it.
Yeah, but here, Jeannie, it's even though most of the best work that Oliver Platt does in Shining City, and he's mesmerizing for a good period of time, it's monologue, which is exactly the thing that you're against. He literally goes on for 25 minutes uninterrupted telling his story. That's monologue.
Well, I guess so. But still, but he was mesmerizing. I was totally involved, you know. Of course, I thought that the play was sort of a cheap trick at the end. And, of course, Richard Griffiths is the best of the best. There's no question about it. Beautiful performance, nuanced. He makes you feel smart. The play makes you feel smart.
Yeah. Let me ask you something. First of all, when I got my seats, they were all the way to the side, so I hardly saw anybody.
Oh.
They really were. They were amazingly to the
side. Well, that's very poor set design.
Yeah, it was.
And
really,
directing.
Yes. But I also, and maybe it's because I've let it be known quite a number of times, and I'm not really crazy that they, I'm not crazy about the fact they brought History Boys to Broadway for like 6 weeks. They're going to grab some Tonys and leave, and then.
Well, wait
plug
a second. For you don't know that it's not going to be extended like every other show.
No, they've already booked the theater.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, then I think it's a privilege that we got to see it.
Yeah, but I you come in, it's a limited, like, really, really short-run show that is not planning on extending because I don't remember what's moving into
the theater.
Well,
do you hold that against 3 Days of Rain?
Yeah, well, of course, I wouldn't want to hold anything against
my drown in the process. Well,
only if you're
in
the first 3 weeks.
Why don't you look at it this way, of quality versus quantity?
I know, but I don't like the fact, I really hate the fact that it's there to pick up awards to push the movie.
But from what I've heard, they didn't expect this kind of reception, and they haven't gotten it on the road on the way to here. So it was a big surprise to them, our reception of this.
I mean, and also they may not have known when they were all planning this, but I thought a pretty weak season for plays on Broadway.
I mean,
think about it, if that's the best of the lager, I think maybe Rabbit Hole might be a little bit better.
You thought Rabbit Hole was better?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we'll talk about that when we get to the lead actress.
Okay, well, you know what? Let's do it. Let's do lead actress.
So
okay.
you just go with Richard Griffiths, though, right?
Oh, definitely.
Okay, lead actress. Here's another one of my little pet peeve things. Because there's no one in the show that's running. Kate Burton for The Constant Wife, Judy Kaye for Souvenir, Lisa Crone for Well, Cynthia Nixon for Rabbit Hole, and Lynn Redgrave for The Constant Wife. First of all, where'd they get The Constant Wife for two?
Now, wait a second. I heard you guys talk about Constant Wife earlier this evening. And, you know, I disagree with you. It was a brilliant play.
Really?
Maybe it's a chick play, like a chick flick.
Yeah.
You know, the woman comes. It was brilliant. And I
thought it was totally tedious.
No, I thought it was amusing, but I didn't think it was at all special.
And no, I nearly hit my date on the way out. I mean, she really energized me against.
Really?
Well, I mean, here's a woman who was, you know, whose husband was cheating with her best friend. She didn't want the scandal of being divorced, so she had to be smarter than everybody else.
Yeah.
And she turned it around so that eventually she got everything she wanted. Her husband was, you know, had the broken heart. She had a new lover. And,
but I didn't think that the performances were anything special.
Oh, she dominated. She manipulated. She kept everything moving on the stage. I mean, Kate Burton is really a featured performer in that because just her name was above the title. But you know, it was Lynn Redgrave's show, and I thought she was.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Kate Burton all that time. Isn't that interesting?
Right.
Until you just said you were talking about Lynn Redgrave. I thought you were talking about Burton.
No, no.
No,
Lynn Redgrave was the motivator, the prime mover of that play.
Yeah, because otherwise I would think of her as a featured performer, too, in that role.
Lynn Redgrave?
Yeah.
No, she was the Constant Wife.
So would you vote for her? Would she be your...
I would, hands down, vote for her, but she won't get it.
Over Judy Kaye in Souvenir.
Really? Judy Kaye...
Although that was a musical, not really a play.
No, Judy Kaye... If you know any singers, you know, trained singers... How difficult it is to sing off key.
That's exactly.
And she's a great singer. She's a great actress. Judy Kaye also deserves the award, but maybe that more a musical than a play. I'm not sure, but she did a brilliant job. But it was small. It was an intimate production. I don't know that it really needed to be on Broadway. I think it was more effective off Broadway. Actually,
yeah, but being on Broadway, I thought it really brought Broadway audiences to that show.
I also liked it more on Broadway.
Deserved to be seen. I mean, it was a wonderful tale about this woman who no one's really heard about. I mean, a lot of people know about her. But, you know, I love when you just learn about this.
That's right. It's a real woman that makes it very special.
Oh, it was...
It's a sweet little play. I mean, I like, as I said, the second time I saw it, I liked it better.
Do you know if they film that at all?
I wish they would.
I would
I
love
wish they would
to
open it up and film
DVD
it.
Of that. Yeah.
And that touching moment at the end when she sings what she hears in her head.
Oh, that was, I mean, it was, well, you know who really should have got a nomination too was that piano player.
He was nice.
He was spectacular.
Yeah.
I mean, so much better than the off-Broadway guy. That's what made the difference.
Yes, he was.
The off-Broadway guy was just like, I couldn't act.
Right.
And he was just like a schlub.
Yeah, he was.
And made a big difference.
On Broadway, you knew this guy really... He at first, I mean, you knew in the beginning it was a job, and then it became his passion.
Yes, he got suckered in.
Oh, yeah. Well, like everyone did.
Yeah. It was a wonderful, it didn't have a very long run.
Unfortunately, no.
No, it was making no money
at all.
Yeah,
it was also in, you know, it was in the Lyceum, for God's sakes, on the wrong side of Broadway, and nothing ever sells over there, right? Except for the magic show.
It's Christ. Well, Lisa Kron was also playing herself, so...
Yeah, nobody...
Less, you know, I don't think that was much... Really.
The New York Times liked Will. Nobody else did.
So the person that's left...
Well, Cynthia Nixon also did a fine job.
The elephant in the room is Cynthia Nixon.
Yeah.
I didn't like the play. I've seen Cynthia Nixon in off-Broadway shows where she was positively luminous. And, of course, everybody loves her from television. So.
Right. Well, when you have Sex in the City, you have to be nominated.
One of my idols, yes, but she wasn't my favorite role, but never mind. But she, you know, she did a creditable job.
Yeah. Well, you can't really be luminous in that role. I
mean, no, you can't.
Mother of a dead child.
No.
It's kind of hard to walk on stage and go,
woo. Her, I don't
I like
think...
the fact that, who was it who thought it was a musical?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it will be.
Somebody earlier, yeah.
If they can make Leopold and Loeb a musical, they can make Rabbit Hole a musical too somehow. Your child is dead, but you go on.
Very good. It'll get Judy Kay to sing it for us. A little off key.
Just a little. Well, thanks for being so on key and in tune with us, Jeannie Lieberman. And again, folks should go to your website.
Editor of theaterscene.net.
Theaterscene.net, which has reviews from New York and also other places too, right, all over?
Oh, we're just opening an L.A.
How about the Vegas
office.
Stuff? Are you going to cover the Vegas stuff?
If they would send a ticket.
Well, and the plane tickets, yeah.
Yeah, if they send a ticket, I would go.
There you go.
But I don't hear it's, you know, it's not, no big deal out there. Nothing seems to thrive in that.
Oh, yeah, you know, just a very quick thing, Jeannie. I'm sorry. But I saw, of all things, I saw Starlight Express in Vegas, and it was great.
I liked it when I saw it here.
No, they changed it. It was much better in London, but they went right back to the London roots, and it was wonderful there. I just couldn't believe it. It was better in Vegas.
Well, it's very suited for that area.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for being so wonderfully suitable for us on this Tony
the
show.
The king of segues.
Yeah, all right. I'm getting better at them as the night goes on. Jeannie, thank you so much. It's been great.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention?
Yes, let's have your attention. We've waited almost 3 hours.
Of course, there's nothing like a nice bowl of Guineas.
That's right. I don't know what that means, but okay. Jeff Goodman has been with me this whole time since 9 o'clock tonight. He's been a wonderful co-host on this Tony show.
Let me out.
A couple more minutes. We have two more categories to go. They're the big ones. Actually, let me do some of the thank yous, though, first. Okay, so got to thank, again, Jeff Goodman.
You got to thank me.
Yeah, because
you couldn't
great.
Do it without me.
I mean, we had two phone calls. Okay, aside from all the people calling in, we had one Pat from I think Levittown who said she loves you. She was listening
What's
to the whole show
love?
Because of you, huh?
What's not to love?
What's not to love? Then someone called in for me, but it was a relative. So,
and did they love you?
Yes, they.
And did they love me?
Yeah. In fact, I've been married to her for 8.5 years, so she better, and I love her too for my wonderful and beautiful wife Joyce. So,
and we all like Joyce.
Yeah, she's great.
Joyce is wonderful.
She is. And who else?
And she has the kids at home.
Well, the two dogs, yeah.
Right.
Evil, vicious guard dogs, you know, the inner sanctum of the Lefkowitz kingdom, guarded by two beautiful dachshunds. Anyway, and hey to Ufti and Murray, if you're listening in.
And don't forget Minuteman Press.
You'll let Minuteman Press, MortgagesRock.com, and Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. I want to thank also some of the great folks who've been on the phone or with us today. Eva Heineman, Charlie Gross, Rosalind Friedman, Jeffrey Sweet, Jeannie Lieberman, Iris Gorbian, Simon Saltzman, and, of course, Tony-nominated actor Danny Burstyn.
That was just too exciting, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. Well, I'm building up the suspense. This is the wait part. as we heard Peggy Lupone sing from Sweeney Todd. Well, got to thank also Heath Schwartz at Bono Brian Brown for his help. Thank you to Bonnie D. Graham, who has a show on Friday nights on WGBB.
How about Joyce Keller?
Well, her show is on Wednesday nights.
Oh,
Bonnie D. Graham is Friday night at 6. It's called Long Island's Dating. Joyce Keller is on Wednesday nights at 11. She's the radio psychic and has been on this station for many years, I think about 18 years. And they both were very nice about supporting this show and giving me promos, so giving a little something back to them. I want to thank again station manager Jeff Lowe, program director Tom Ross. And now, drum roll, two categories to get through with Jeff Goodman. Best play, History Boys, Alan Bennett.
Lieutenant of Inishmore by Martin McDonough.
Rabbit Hole, David Lindsay-Abaire.
And Shining City by Conor McPherson.
Jeff, your thoughts?
Rabbit Hole. I like Rabbit Hole. I really love Rabbit Hole. History Boys is good, but Rabbit Hole moved me.
Agree. Yeah, I don't know if Rabbit Hole quite moved me, but it held me more than History Boys, where I went in and out and kind of waited for it all to pull together, and it never really did. I mean, it does. I mean, it's a very smart play and
right.
Funny. But
you
Rabbit
feel
Hole
more
is
intelligent when you leave because we've just seen a lovely English play.
Right. Yeah.
And going from that to the musicals.
Well, actually, no. I wanted to say a little bit more about
first
play, but also the fact of Lindsay-Abaire's growth as a playwright, and I've said this on past episodes. The fact that I didn't. His earlier plays, which got some notoriety, like Funny Mears and Wonder of the World, they were these dark sort of weird farces. They had some human element, but they're also kind of crazy, and I don't think they all worked. And this one was such a different change of pace, Rabbit Hole was.
Yes, yes.
That, I mean, it's not going to win. You know History's Boys is going to win.
I know.
But I would really kind of like to see Rabbit Hole take
it. Me too. Please, let's have a little upset.
Okay, yeah. Well, that would be a pretty big upset, because Inishmore would be the other real contender there. The critics loved Inishmore.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was not as funny as I wanted it to be. You know, it was well.
But it was shocking.
You know what? You know the scene in Monty Python and the Holy Grail where they cut off the legs and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
That was shocking, funny 25 years ago.
Right.
This is, okay, so they're cutting up body parts on stage. Shocking, but.
Okay.
Okay.
But now on
best musical.
And to lighter stuff, we have The Wedding Singer, Jersey Boys, Drowsy Chaperone, and The Color Purple for Best Musical, all of which I really liked because it was such a change of pace. Well, maybe not so much The Color Purple, but I kind of hope that we have the same thing as we had last year where all four musicals are still running to this day and one is closing in July.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure I need The Wedding Singer to run that much, or certainly not Color Purple, but.
Well, Wedding Singer is just fun. It's just a good
time. I just didn't like it. I was bored.
Don't have to go anymore.
Well, yeah. Well, not as bored as I was for Color Purple. That I was just marking time on the old watch.
When's this over?
Now, Jersey Boys is a wonderful job of what it is. But
yeah.
It is a jukebox musical. One of the best. And fabulously directed. And a great time at the theater. But I didn't have
it
a great time
yeah.
as other people were.
Oh, I had a really good time. But I just don't think it deserves to be best musical because it's not the best musical.
Not the original new best thing.
And that's why it just all falls that the big winner is going to be
Drowsy Chaperone. Oh, well.
So mark our words and we'll be here next week.
Yes, for another 3 hours. No, I don't think so. But I will be here next week from definitely from 11 to midnight with
my
usual show.
And if my picks are right, I'll be here next week to gloat.
Yeah, okay.
That's all gloat for
you. You're invited back, and I might be on at 10 also. So check in on AM 1240 WGBB and on the internet at am1240wgbb.com for Dave's Gone By next week at 11, next Sunday. This has been wonderful. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to, as I said, to all the wonderful guests who called in, to my co-host, Jeff Goodman. I hope you liked it. Let me know what you thought. Write to me, davesgoneby@aol.com. That's D-A-V as in Victor, E-S, goneby@aol.com. Oh, yeah. Well, I don't guarantee I'll write you, especially if you're nasty. But if you have any comments,
if you're nasty, I write you back.
Or ideas for next year's Big Tony show, send them to me, davesgoneby@aol.com. And check out my website, davesgoneby.org. Thank you so much to everyone. Thanks also to David Hinckley for giving us that lovely mention in the Daily News. Watch the Tonys. They're next Sunday from 8 to 11 on CBS TV. And listen to me next week, right after the Tonys. Go to the theater.
Because they will end just before your show begins.
Exactly. Perfectly. Right on time. And as I said, just I know it's expensive, but there are ways to see theater inexpensively. And it's important. It's a good cultural thing to do for yourself, for your family, for your friends.
Go see a Broadway show.
That's right. Have a good night, everybody.